Today's show is brought to you by Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana.
A world gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
We did it! We got it out. I must apologize for the delayed release. That sounds dirty. As you know, if you are a regular listener, I'm getting ready to shoot my TV series, Stan Against Evil, which will be premiering first week of November on the Independent Film Channel, IFC. And we shoot it this summer in Atlanta. And currently, I am, as my dear father would say, busier than a one-armed paper hanger with the crabs. But we're here, we're dear, and we hope to stay near. Next month's episode will be a regular episode with guests April Richardson and Matt Bronger. And then in July, it'll be a different kind of episode. It might be unplugged without all of the editing that I do so love. Maybe a straight interview or a best of or something. But we will be back on our regular schedule in August, which, as you know, is about as regular as an elderly man who's eaten too much peanut butter. But, as Marty DeBerge would say, enough of my yakking. Today we're going to solve all the world's problems by conversing with my two most politically opposed friends. Raving, bomb-throwing Bolshevik Eddie Pepitone. You can follow Eddie on the Twitter at Eddie Pepitone. And from Meet the Press, self-described right-wing nut Mike Murphy. And you can follow him on the Twitter at Murphy Mike. Now, you might ask, how can I be close friends with two people who have such differing political views? Well, I'm a grown-up. And what's great about this episode is that the three of us disagree without screaming at each other or calling each other Hitler. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm pretty far to the left, but I also believe that a lot of the country isn't, and that we should allow for differing opinions. Which is not to say that Eddie, you know what, just listen to the episode. Now, while I have your attention, if you are a fan of this podcast, I wanted to lob some free recommendations your way. As far as other podcasts are concerned, you can do no better than Karina Longworth's You Must Remember This Podcast. Or Derek Faraci and Amy Nicholson's The Canon, the movie lover's crackpipe. And I just picked up John Doe's new CD, Westerner, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. Just a little plug from me to you. And what's a little plug between friends? Huh? That also sounds dirty.
It's showtime.
Hour. Free and worth it.
Chris Hayes will have Rachel Maddow on as a guest. Rachel Maddow will have Chris Hayes on as a guest. Then they both go on the Chris Matthews show and the whole thing turns into a snake eating its tail. But if there's one thing worse than that, it's just watching people scream over each other because nobody learns anything. And I actually believe that people, when they really boil it down, aren't as far apart as they like to think. I've had many people troll me on the internet when I've said something about guns, and then I will actually respond to them in a non-fuck you way, and it only takes one or two exchanges before you're actually talking to people like human beings. To that end, I thought that I, a bomb-throwing Hollywood lefty, liberal pinko, commie homo, would have on a professional conservative to talk about are, as the Chinese would say, interesting times. Mike Murphy is a, first and foremost, national treasure. International bon vivant, famous banjo teacher, hand model. But in all seriousness, Mike is a very well-known Republican strategist. He is, if you're a political nerd or a fan of Meet the Press, you know him well. If you're Donald Trump, you hate him. He's been a longtime GOP strategist and commentator for NBC News. and he also happens to be a personal friend of mine. Please welcome to our stage, Mike Murphy.
This is the sound of my voice, you pinko bastard. Actually, Mr. Gould, I'm sorry to tell you this, but Mr. Murphy is far too busy to do the podcast today. But my name is John Miller. I'm a spokesman, and I'll be able to handle any questions you have, particularly about how attractive women, Hollywood starlets in particular, find him. It's fabulous.
You are one of the only professional GOP strategists that has a side business in Hollywood, which I think is very interesting.
I'm actually the dues-paying member of two unions, too. So I'm on double-secret probation back at GOP headquarters. And during the strike, the guild threw me out of the building because some knucklehead from the AFL thought I was a spy for Rupert Murdoch. Which means I got out of strike duty, which was fine with me and my feet. So, yeah. Every time we vote to go on strike, we teach the industry how to work without writers. So we're
Yay. Yeah. But it is interesting. We've been friends for a couple of years now, and there was that time that you and I went to Lucha Vavoom, which is a show here in Los Angeles that is it's a big crazy Mexican wrestling.
Comedy, strippers,
comedy,
it has it all.
Burlesque, not strippers.
Not burlesque, strippers. That is true. Yeah. And my wife does. It was burlesque in our
form. As two men here who are the fathers of daughters, there is no stripping. Right. I believe that is testing fate in a way that I don't want to.
And horribly depressing. The burlesque is more interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. But then people. More than one person came to me later and said, "Somebody said they saw you at Lucha Vavoom sitting with Mike Murphy."
One of them.
He's not a werewolf. He just has a different theory of the role of government.
Yeah, I'm just not high on Karl Marx, you know. Makes me Satan on wheels around L.A. It's interesting what my conservative friends all say, you know, in the East Coast or in the South or wherever, where they're more prevalent than here in Los Angeles, where there's like a bounty on them, is what's it like in show business with all those people? And people have been very cool about it. They kind of look at you funny, like, oh, the ape man from the jungle can use a knife and fork. Fascinating. you know, touch the piano key. This is a piano savage. Ding, ding, ding. But
that was what you actually said. Nice. Yeah. One of the things that... Because your wife is a liberal.
A full colonel in the KGB. She goes up to the shortwave every night and gives a report on troop movement. She doesn't know there's nobody on the other end anymore. No. She's really not that political. She's just a good, loyal Minnesota, you know, farm labor girl.
As Barry Crimmins said, land of 10,000 lakes and two shitty vice presidents. But you said the dinner at your wedding, the whatever that's called, the dinner before the wedding ceremony, when you were talking about meeting her family, like, and you know, like, I had to show them I could use a knife and fork and my fingers moved.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I didn't like fly into a rage when somebody said algebra. They had their test words, kilometer, what will he do? Her dad used to be kind of a Chamber of Commerce Republican, but then corporate cutbacks, next thing you know, he's got the kind of awkward Obama poster in the suburban living room and everything. Yeah. But look, I've been around the political racket since the 80s. And you learn, I have a lot of friends on your side. David Axelrod's a dear old friend of mine.
And that's what I always tell people. Mike, it's like, yeah. And I actually say this, I have recently started name checking you in my show because when I get into politics, I was like, I'm very good friends with a professional Republican. And we have very differing opinions about the political, the role of government, et cetera, et cetera. But we can still be friends because we're grown-ups.
Well, I know some of your venues, so when I get the package of shit wrapped in kale, I'll thank you for putting me on somebody's radar screen. No, it's true. It's true. And it happens in the business a lot. What's kind of funny about consultants is you often have a lot of rivalries and hatreds within the consulting business within your own party because they're like economic fights.
Right.
But you sometimes have friends across the aisle who are, you know, living a parallel life. I mean, Axelrod and I have beat the tar out of each other in Senate and governor campaigns all over the country for years, but we still have a pretty close friendship. So
it's sort of like being literally a hired gun. Like, I'm going to Laredo. I'm going to Tombstone.
Okay. There's a little about that. Yeah. You ever worked the cattle wars in West Kansas? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You ought to go to Miss Kitty's. You know, and you live on the road. People all think we're in D.C. I mean, I'm based here in L.A. I was in D.C. and New York before. But and I don't really do it anymore, to be honest. I got pulled out of retirement for a last hurrah. I was the genius behind the Jeb Bush Super PAC, where we spent $100 million and got 17 votes. So my long
and that
time
was just a couple months ago.
My long time voluntary retirement is now a little more bolted down.
And I do want to get into that.
Yeah, sure.
But that is a fascinating thing where, you know, it is like you get into a race and you know that there are, you know, 80% of the stuff is boilerplate. All right, we got to get this constituency. We got to get this constituency. Right. And it's just a matter of getting your guy or your woman into office. And I often thought the first season of House of Cards, the first season before it went crazy, which is not to say I don't still love it. I love that show. But the first season was one of the most accurate depictions of American political life, in that it really showed that it's all personal. It's all personal ambition, and you pick one team, and there are very few hardcore ideologues. Like, I do believe that Bernie Sanders believes in what he says. I do believe that Paul Ryan is a committed conservative, and that Bernie Sanders is a committed social liberal. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of it is what helps me.
I think it's a mishmash of both things. People are most people, not all. I mean, we have our fair share of sociopaths, including the current nominee in our party. But most people get into it for kind of an ideological interest, and then they find out what a meat grinding, professionalized business it is.
Right.
And they become more and more brittle and cynical. And there's still some real, Paul Ryan's in politics for all the right reasons. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I had a guy come to my office once with a map of the U.S. and said, you know, my lifetime dream has been to be in Congress. Pick me a district I can represent. You know, where's there an opening? He had a map of the country. I've had,
And that was William Shatner.
Yeah, exactly. That guy eventually decided to run in his home district and got lost trying to find his elementary school for the announcement driving around. He didn't have GPS because, you know, he had the speech of why I love you people. So it's not unlike show business, and that part of the fun of it is sitting around for other veterans telling the stories of
it's profoundly
the human
like
weirdness
show business.
You bump into.
And it's so like show business.
Yeah.
When I travel this great land, and I say great in quotes.
That's for sure.
I universally get one question from people. Where's Eddie Pepitone? So he's right here. Eddie Pepitone is
with
us. Hey,
everybody. Thank you for your support and your pestering, Dana.
Thank you. I like to think of myself as a crow. And I land on my friend's shoulder and I hit them in the cheek with my beak until they come and do my podcast. Before I had a podcast, it pained me that I couldn't summon people to jury duty. So I thought, what's the next best thing?
BP, before podcast.
Yes, having a podcast is put you. It's like being in charge of a jury pool. That's basically it. Now I can do it.
Yeah. Hey, guys, will you do my podcast?
But as they say, as the Chinese say, we live in such interesting times. Now, we're a week into the fact that it's hard to avoid this story. A crazy person is running for president, but not like a regular crazy person that runs for president. I think everybody who runs for president is crazy. Mario Cuomo said anybody smart enough to do the job well is smart enough to know they don't want it.
Wow. Is it a lose-lose to be president?
Bill Clinton called it the jewel in the crown of the federal prison system. The amazing thing about Donald Trump is that he is, you know, when you date somebody and they pull an emotional stunt that's not on par with their chronological age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really? I remember this play. I used to get it in study hall, but I remember this play. That's what he does every time. He is literally like at a sixth grade psycho-emotive level.
Okay. Can I say this, though?
I'm talking, of course, about Bernie Sanders.
We disagree. Everybody imitates Bernie Sanders, by the way.
Many people who imitate Bernie Sanders are actually just imitating B. Arthur.
Arthur. Arthur, we need a living wage, Arthur.
Trump is popular, right?
Yeah.
Or there's a bunch of... So to me, what you just said is very true. Trump reflects the infantilization of this culture. Most people are kids. Most people are emotionally children in our culture. Do you agree with that? I mean, yeah. I really think that's why he's so fucking popular,
mm-hmm.
is that he strikes that nerve with the other baby children, right? Isn't that a good way to say it?
Men and women, man-childs and women-childs. Men and women children.
That's what the country is now.
Especially in the Republican primary electorate. You have a lot of people. And this is in the primary electorate, not the general.
Primaries.
And that Mike Murphy on our other podcast, on the other half of this podcast, mm-hmm. made this point that there's a big difference between the Republican primary and the general election, because then you're into independents and Democrats. And as Mike said, 43% of the population will vote for a brick if it has an R after its name. 45% will vote for a brick if it has a D after its name. And then you've got that other percentage that you have to win over. And I don't think he can do it. But of the Republican primary voters, you have a lot of people that have a steady diet of Fox News, the Drudge Report, and right-wing talk radio. And
Right.
Their job is every day to whip people into a paranoid frenzy. The president is a terrorist. He's not from here. It's like giving people speed.
Yeah.
But you can't whip people into a rage every mm-hmm. day and then expect mm-hmm. them to have a rational garbage in, garbage out. You know, and I think that that's what you're looking at.
The other element to Trump's popularity and also weirdly Sanders' popularity is the complete disenchantment and disenfranchisement.
You had it right.
Sorry. I don't trust myself.
I could hear
or love myself.
I could hear as you started to say I could hear your father in your head going, "No, that's not the word."
If I had a loving parent, just one, I wouldn't even be here.
Sure, I understand completely.
I'm a talented guy.
I understand completely.
Who just has this thing, I just call it the thing now, that lives in my neck.
Yeah.
And it's called the voice of failure and doom.
Yeah.
No, but yeah,
but no, listen. Not only, I think every performer has the voice of failure and doom in their head. I actually think most self-aware people have the voice of failure and doom in their head. And I had it too. If my parents
Some people
were,
can transcend it though.
Yes. That's what my shrink says. Your job is to cut that string. Cut that string between your family of origin and your adult life. I have too many strings to cut. I'm cutting that with a tooth I found on the street, and it's just not working.
Mine is a cable.
Yeah. Steel tensile cable.
What do you cut that with, shrinky?
The one that they laid under the Atlantic.
Yes.
If my parents were a dependable source of affection, I would be able to get over breakups instead of carrying them around in my misery hump.
Absolutely.
But the voice of failure that is in everyone's head, this is why I have so much respect for Little Richard.
Why Little Richard?
Because the voice of failure in Little Richard's head is also that of Little Richard. So when it's bad enough that you're like backstage going, "I don't think I'm going to do well tonight."
Yeah.
He has to listen to, "You ain't no good." Woo! If I was you, I wouldn't even go on stage tonight. I go home, have a TV dinner, and hide under the bed. Woo! Nobody wants to hear you sing. You ain't no good.
Is Little Richard a out-of-the-closet self-loather?
I'm assuming as a performer, he's out of the closet something. But I would assume that everybody who chooses as their living to go into a brightly lit area and beg strangers to love them.
Oh, my God.
As I've said before, no one has ever said in the vast history of the human experience, "Now that I've worked through all of my emotional bullshit, I can concentrate full time on becoming a ventriloquist."
I'll never forget being on the steps of a bar in Edinburgh. And just being so terrified for my first show.
My old roommate Eddie Driscoll used to do a funny impression of, like, when you're bombing so bad you can hear someone in the audience trying to clear their throat but be quiet about it. Like, you're bombing so bad you can hear someone going
Yeah. Oh, God. But I'll never forget being in the stairwell and just being like, what the fuck am I doing? Like that hitting home so intensely, like, I don't like any part of this. I don't like the fact that these people are here. I don't like the fact that I have to perform in front of these people. Mm-hmm. I can't stand what I'm going to say, you know,
yeah.
Just on and on.
I have nothing to say to these people.
And what's amazing about that whole process is that you go then and do it.
Yep.
That really is the big victory, though. That really is the big victory, and why after I do a couple of shows on the road that I have to eat a lot is because that's a big reward for what I did, and I don't want to drink or smoke dope, so I'll just really eat and reward myself with a belly that's the size of a Buick
Skylark.
Thank you for finishing that, because the voice of failure once again clamped down on. Yeah, you can't. This was the voice right there.
You don't even know the name of vintage
Buicks. Yes, this was the voice right there. Don't you dare use the ambassador. Me and Dana were talking about the ambassador, which is a station wagon that exists, the vintage station
I
wagon.
I own one. We can say it. My kids. But Dad, why did you? Dad, my daughter said when she saw it, Dad, you need help. She's so funny. My oldest is so funny.
Your kids help you, actually. They give you perspective. There's such beautiful perspective. I don't have any.
It's the only good thing I've ever done.
Yeah. I don't have that. My dogs love me, but
no, they don't.
That's tough.
No, they don't.
They don't?
I think if I died here, my kids would think twice before they started to eat my flesh. I've told the boa constrictor story on this podcast before, and I don't remember who told me this story, but it's a beautiful lesson about relationships and the perception of affection.
Oh, man. There I'm already woman, not feeling good.
There was a woman that owned a Burmese python. She was she had a pet python.
Stripper?
We can only assume. We can only assume. We can only assume.
I don't know what they're doing with pythons, these people.
Well,
these naked people.
I don't know either.
Why do naked people want huge snakes around them?
Well, it would keep people from rushing the stage.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And she would sleep with the python.
Oh, boy.
Just like in the bed, the way I sleep with my dogs.
Is that true? She would sleep with this
python? Yeah. And the story is that the python started to stretch along her body instead of coil at the bottom of the bed. And she thought there was something wrong with it. Like something was distended and it couldn't coil anymore.
Stretch along her body?
Yeah.
Like sort of like a person next to her?
Yes, like with Spooner. And so she took it to the doctor and told the doctor why, because it had stopped eating and was doing that. And the doctor said, yes, it's getting ready to eat you. It's measuring you up to see if you will fit.
Is that true?
Yeah.
It stopped eating. This is a perfect metaphor for relationships.
It is. It's amazing. It's getting ready to eat you.
We couple up to eat each other psychically.
Yes.
We don't do it physically.
We distend our emotional jaws and devour each other psychically.
Yeah.
We solved it. Match.com.
The good people among us, we start reading self-help books to try to put that process off.
I just filled
or up, seeing professionals.
I just filled up my Match.com profile, and I have to say, in a 7-sentence profile, there are 3 references to spray patterns.
Spray patterns.
I haven't done it. I'm terrified to do it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
You were telling me that you were in Washington, D.C. at the Star Wars exhibit at the museum, and a sitting congressman wanted to know why some of these weapons were being kept from the Defense Department.
Yeah, no. That happened early in my career. It was actually at the House Recording Studio, and cable TV was a new thing in the early 80s out in, you know, California, land of the future. And there were 3 congressmen who had 3 stools, and one guy would interview the other 2 about how great he was, and that would be his 20-minute show, and then they'd rotate. Every once in a while, we'd get a guest, And Dave Prowse, who you would know who that is,
I know
but most
David,
people
he,
don't. He was the guy in
the Darth Vader suit.
Exactly. He spoke like David Niven. He was big as a house, but yeah. He was very polite.
He's also out of makeup, the bodyguard in Clockwork Orange.
Oh, there you go. Well, he came over because he was part of something that was at that time big, maybe still is in the UK, called like Green Belt Man. I don't remember.
Yes, I do remember.
It's the safety thing, and I think they were trying to export it here. So he was doing that shtick, and afterward, a multi-term member of the U.S. Congress. I'm in college at this point at Georgetown, and I was interning there. Started talking about the laser swords, asking Prowse, you know, did anybody ever get hurt on set? You know, did you give one of those to the Army to check out? You know, you know, and he thought it was real. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a member of Congress, and I better stick around politics. There's probably some room at the top here. Not a lot of competition, you know. So, it's very funny. There are good people, like any organization, there are really good people trying to drag all the dead weight along.
Yeah.
And then, frankly, there are the voters who, you know, it's...
who also suck.
A lot of me.
Yeah.
And, raise his taxes. I don't like that guy.
One of the most memorable jokes that I remember from The Simpsons, and I quote it because I had nothing to do with it, and it was Homer or somebody was running for something, and it was... who wants better schools? Yeah! Who wants incrementally higher taxes to pay for it? No!
You know, well, it's ever, don't tax me, don't tax you or me, tax that fool behind the tree.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like, look,
Kevin Rooney had a great line, which was, the conservative thinks, I got mine, fuck you, get yours. And the liberal thinks, no, that person's in trouble. Let's give them your money.
My joke about the two convention systems is we used to be the Republicans, the social Darwinists. We were really mean. You know, you need an iron lung. We might rent one to you at a fair rate of return. And in our primary, it was all sudden death. If you're the winner, you get all the delegates. If you're the loser, you get nothing. You get a bus trip out of town. The Democrats all cried when old Yeller died. So you come in eighth place, they still give you delegates. Which is why traditionally their thing has gone on forever. Now we've gone to that system, which is where why our thing took so long. But the point I wanted to make about the foolishness of the voters, you see it in a kind of parallel universe. The joke is that the Democrats have stupid policy and we have stupid politicians because I like a lot of our ideology, but I see some
and
Trump.
And a lot of people don't. Here's the interesting thing, and I do want to get it. A lot of people don't know what conservative ideology really means because they're distracted by the hot button cultural issues that are always flagged to wave up the base. Like, I think to a lot of people now, when they think of a Republican, putting Trump aside, which is a whole other thing, you think of people who want to tell transgendered people where to shit. But that's what gets the coverage.
No, I call it the
average person, it just looks like the ding dong in Texas. It just like you just look like a mean asshole.
Yeah,
I'm talking about that particular guy.
No, it's the perception.
And it's never the person. It's never the person that says like we think that the government shouldn't tell you where to go to the. You know, it's because I can always see like the conservative things. The president shouldn't be telling anybody where they have to go to the bathroom. You know,
in blue states, we are seen as the elders from Footloose.
Right.
Social dancing. and
instead of dancing to create babies.
And then there's a mirror image where you can go to parts of Oklahoma where they think, you know, well, if the gay orgies ever stop in L.A., maybe they'll get organized to try to have a communist revolution. So both sides don't know each other well.
Exactly.
Because the truth is it's all kind of a mirror image. The same. I mean, I take Bernie Sanders, as bad and horrible as Trump is, and I don't like Trump. Bernie really believes there's a room somewhere where a guy in a top hat and a tuxedo with a big white mustache, like the Monopoly guy, is maniacally laughing.
I believe his name is Community Chest.
is shoveling enormous piles of gold coins. Corporate profits.
Right.
And the college can be free. You know,
which even I know is insane.
Completely insane. I mean, look, I don't think there's one bit of malice in Bernie. I think he believes all of it. I also think if you gave him a freshman 101 economics course, there'd be an F.
Right.
So but people cling on to the fan. I mean, Trump says, I'll build a wall. Your uncle Norbert, the moron, will now get a job that Mexican we've never seen took.
Right.
And
finally, your uncle Norbert will get a job picking lettuce for 8 cents a day.
No, exactly. And yes, he can tell all his co-workers about the conspiracy.
Right.
And of course, Mexico will build the wall for free.
Right.
And he's going to tell the Ford Motor Company they're not allowed to work in North America anymore because he says so.
Right.
I mean, it's utterly, it's so just so stunningly stupid.
Yes.
But and that's kind of where our politics are now. It's two kinds of stupid fighting out in the general election, though I do think Hillary will be in the nominee, so Bernie will not be the thing. But she's got an ethical blind spot the size of the Hindenburg. So, there, you know, it's just one flaw on top of another, which is tragic.
I find it fascinating that, you know, in the sense of the, and I know that you were very close to John McCain personally, come up against the historical tidal wave that was the Obama candidacy. The United States of America is going to elect our first African-American president. Right. And anybody who opposed him is punching their way out of a corner that they don't want to be in. Oddly, Hillary Clinton, who will be, if elected, the first woman president of the United States, but does not really have that sense of history behind her. She has so much more baggage that she doesn't even seem to be able to capitalize on that. That of all the people that on the left, there would be people going, no, we don't want the woman. We want this old guy.
Right, right. Exactly.
You know, it just seems like if you had described that to somebody, they would think you were insane.
Well, Bernie has this anti-politics thing going. You know, he's not slick. He rails against the system. He's the absolute king of easy answers.
He sounds
Wall
like
Street
Arthur.
Did it. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, you've got $400,000 of college debt from your two PhDs in sociology and yoga. and you can't earn enough money to pay it off in a week. That's not your fault. You know, right. You should clap twice and make it go away, and Exxon will pay because we all know they're bad.
Right.
So he has managed to out-stupid her, but she has a lot of baggage. The truth is, if we could nominate a candidate who is not a joke, we could beat her. And with the demographic problems we face, because we only really get the votes of white people, particularly white men, but white people, it's really hard for the Republicans to win a presidential election now. But Hillary's so flawed, we could have. It's funny, a movie producer friend of mine, Aditya Sood, says this is a battle of the two biggest pre-aware titles you could ever imagine. Clinton and Trump.
Yeah.
Both incredibly famous, both with incredible baggage.
Yeah.
It's like
it's Batman v Superman.
Two bad sequels, and there are only two choices. And it's the last movie
it's
you
Bad
get
Woman
to
v.
see
Stupid
for 4
Man.
Years.
It's Bad Woman v. Stupid Man.
Yeah.
As much as you can throw at Hillary Clinton, it's...
And
you know,
don't think Bill hasn't.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, that was what I wanted to... I always wondered if... On the night that he came home after the Lewinsky story broke and she supposedly threw a lamp at him, at what point did the Secret Service have to step in? Because it is their job to protect the president. Like, at what point did they have Mrs. Clinton?
Right? I don't know. They probably have a secret rule that the female spouse gets at least one free shot before they go into the flying tackle. But, he deserved it.
But it is amazing to me that Trump has gotten as far as he has. And you can say a lot, you know, Lawrence O'Donnell, you know, will take it back to the dismantling of the public education system in the 1980s. And I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Also, a lot of easy answers, people that don't like to think about it. I think a lot of his supporters are people that don't normally vote. I mean, you would know more than I would.
Well, you know,
but I'm truly astounded by it. And to my not learned, but not ignorant perspective either, it's really never happened before. George Wallace didn't get close.
Well, didn't get nominated.
That's what I mean.
I mean, the numbers on Trump are harder than kind of the media hype about, oh, he's Superman, he won a Republican primary. Which, by the way, until the day he's nominated and the gavel cracks, I'm not so sure he'll be the nominee.
Really?
I think it's highly unlikely he won't be, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I would say this. People are confusing the Republican primary with the general election. Mm-hmm. General election, 127, give or take a million people vote. In a Republican primary this year, it'll probably be about 27 million, maybe a little more. So Trump is working. Trump's like a AA hockey player that's done really well, but now he has to go to the show. The hockey show. And we'll see. We'll see. Trump's gotten about 41-42% of the Republican vote. Just there were so many candidates, you know, more than mm-hmm. half voted against him of that group. He's gotten about 10-11 million votes out of what's going to be, after California and New Jersey, about 27 million. Not super impressive. You know, he's a minority, a plurality candidate in an extremely specialty market, the Republican primary.
Right.
Just like the Democratic primary is a specialty market. So now he's going to have the Republican nomination, which is worth something. But most of the votes you need to win a general election in that big 127 million electorate can't stand him. It's like he was built in a lab to lose the election.
And if you watch,
women hate him. Minorities hate him.
But why is it when I watch the news now? And see, this is, you know, the news now
You don't watch the news. You watch the news business.
I watch
It's like show business.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that was the question. Because, you know, I don't know what is the reputable news source in the United States anymore.
Oh, they all try.
BBC America, maybe. But it's all, the story is all the Republicans are getting around him, and he's it's a neck and neck race.
Right. But remember,
they need to get you to tune in.
NBC tries a little harder, but they all have the problem. Trump's a pre-aware title. So if you're in a very competitive world watching your numbers, your ratings, and you have a choice between Gary Busey setting himself on fire or Professor Boring going through quantum mechanics, what are you going to put on the television?
You don't get what you want and you don't get what you need. You get what you are. If you put out a vibe that you're not great, you'll find somebody that agrees with you.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you could put that into getting work and stuff. Like what I'm talking about. With
I don't know, man. This business is so full of hacks with a lot of confidence.
That's very true, you know, man.
They just go into that room.
That is very true.
Yeah. They just go into that room and sell it.
Like the bright people, at least I want to say this, like the bright introspective people don't do as well because they realize all the flaws and just all the, like, yeah, well, I don't know.
The people that hire you don't want to see your doubt because they're worried about looking bad for hiring you. If I go to a network and pitch a show and I'm like, oh, I don't know, this isn't going to be good. It might not work. It might work. Then they don't want it, even if it's brilliant. But some guy, this is great. You know, the Brady Bunch in a high school.
Yeah.
Splort.
Is that why people partly like Trump? Because he goes up there and it's hilarious. The magical, he's like a little magician. Like, don't worry. I don't do Trump at all. But it's like, oh, hey, don't. But he is kind of a New York Guido. It's like,
yeah,
hey, don't worry.
He's a total Guido.
Hey, come on. When I'm president, yes, I've been talking like a moron.
Yeah.
But when I'm president, I'll turn the page. Believe me.
Yeah.
And we'll work it out. And I will let the Chinese know that they don't have an idiot.
Right.
Now.
And people who have ever been in a relationship with somebody who goes, don't worry. As soon as you do this thing for me, I'll change. Whoever's seen that work should vote for Trump. Every time somebody who's done the same thing for decades comes back at you and says, no, I'm going to change now. And it doesn't involve daily attendance of a 12-step self-help recovery program. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got. But what's amazing with a lot of his big promises, you can't do them. You literally can't build a wall across the southern border of the country and make a sovereign nation that doesn't want to pay for it. It's an engineering impossibility. And two, it's like no more clouds. No more clouds on Sundays. Every Sunday is going to be beautiful. And people just say, yeah. But here's the thing. If he gets voted in and it doesn't happen, people just go, yeah, it's a conspiracy. They won't let him do it. So it's really a win-win for him. Because they just want their team to win. And after there was this whole thing in 2008 when Obama was elected that he had this massive well of support. Well, he had this massive well of support from all of these people. And he had this big mailing list. And remember, it was going, we're going to do this together. Be the change you're going to want to be. And everybody was galvanized. We're going to make change. And then after the election, everybody kind of went back to their shit because they really just wanted their team to win. So much of presidential elections is, I want my team to win. Believe me, I want to watch Donald Trump concede a lot more than I'm excited about anything Hillary Clinton has up her sleeve. I just want to watch him quit and say, I lost. And that's why I used to say House of Cards, the first season, was like, to me, one of the best depictions of American politics because it's all personal. It's all personal. You're on a particular team, but very few people have any ideology that they really give a shit about.
Yeah.
We solved it.
Well, I was just thinking that when Obama was elected, I really got into it. I was so fucking horrified by George W. and Cheney and Rumsfeld and that gang.
As Chris Matthews would say, Cheney. It's Dick Cheney.
No, but those guys who were just outright criminally insane, who were still paying the price. But so I was really into Obama, and I was out there with – I remember being out there on on Santa Monica Boulevard during Halloween, and it was just before the election.
Uh-huh.
And I was holding up, I had the V for Vendetta mask. I thought Obama, I had a big Obama sign. It was right before the election, you know, Halloween.
Right.
And I was out there just so psyched about Obama. And then Obama gets elected. And then you realize, oh, wait. And then all the bullshit that goes on in Congress where they block, like just the partisan politics.
Gridlock, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they just, that wasn't even a gridlock. They set down a roadblock. He's not going to do anything. I mean, John Stewart said, and it really is true, it's like both parties suck, but at least the Democrats are trying.
Right.
You know, and I agree with that. I agree with that. I believe in a two-party system, and I believe that there are great conservative ideas. But there are giant liberal failings. The school, you know, public schools are strangled by the unions, and the healthcare reform should have included tort reform. There's a lot of shit that is conservative ideas. The entire fucking healthcare program that Obama took was originally a conservative idea. It came out of a conservative think tank, not the, whatever the conservative equivalent of the Brookings Institute is. When you think of Republicans now, you think of people who want to tell transgendered kids where to piss, and not the fact that people should be motivated and have the ability to create their own wealth. You know, and that's just the problem, because people don't get out to vote because they should be motivated to create their own wealth. They get motivated to vote because I don't want Caitlyn Jenner in the men's room. Or actually, they do want her in the men's room. They don't want her in the... That's the interesting thing about all these people, like that guy in Texas about the transgender law. They all want to pee next to Caitlyn Jenner. That really is what it comes down to.
Oh, man.
Still use a urinal, which would be kind of an interesting, just Caitlyn Jenner hanging dong at an airport urinal would be kind of an interesting sight.
Everybody's concerned about where people are going to the bathroom, right? But what about the disenfranchisement of people? And Trump, he does mention this, is that the fact that so many corporations in America have taken their jobs overseas. They've sold out the American worker, and Trump picks up a ton of these people.
Right.
Instead of it going where it should go, to Sanders.
Yeah, because it's
on the left, because it goes to this lunatic.
Right. Well, because he's angry.
Yeah.
And anger, you know, and that's an easy emotion to harness.
Yes. Yeah, because it's so on this. It's so right there. It's so.
And you're right.
Like the unemployment rate. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't have the answer. But yeah,
I'm out of here.
Globalization has absolutely swung a wrecking ball through the American economy. But I think people have to, like, you have to work harder and longer now to make less than you used to.
And yeah, I think it's crazy.
That was going to always be the case. With the globalization of the economy, it's just a matter of degree. And absolutely, with all of this rampant deregulation, you have these corporations that are just rat fucking people profoundly. But they don't do it in a cabal. They all do it individually, and they're all trying to fuck each other. That's the illusion in the way that the right thinks that Obama goes into the White House at night and puts on a turban and goes, that's not going on. And neither are all the heads of the major corporations in the war room from Dr. Strangelove going, how do we fuck over the working people tomorrow? They're all trying to fuck each other too. You know, it's Darwinian.
It's a weird country now. I mean, it's slowly gotten worse. Like we are a third world country at its core in a lot of it, surrounded by a tremendous amount of wealth. We're a first world and a third world country now.
And I think the best way to deal with that is just to scream we're number one and not think about it.
Yeah, man.
Donald Trump says, make America great again. Hillary Clinton says, America was always great. And I saw a hat that said, America was never great.
Did you see it?
Yeah, but I was like, oh, I don't want to argue. I don't want to argue with people all day, but that would be America.
Oh, that's very funny.
What about, like, we're an exceptional country founded on a brilliant idea, but we have many, 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 continue to the next bumper sticker, many, 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 many flaws.
By the way,
also, mom and dad aren't perfect. Mom and dad make mistakes.
That's why I really haven't even been following. Like, I don't even watch any of the Trump stuff any of the Clinton stuff either, because of what you just said. You have one guy saying, you know, America, we're going to make, you know, I'll make America great again. And then you have the other vapid candidate, Clinton, saying we're such a great nation. And I just now, I now have a visceral tuning off because, and I'll get back to the Obama thing. I really was into Obama, Obama's presidency. And then I realized, oh, this is all bullshit. He's like a hood ornament on top of this.
That's Rick Overton's joke. What? The country is a Mack truck and every 4 years we vote to put a bulldog or an eagle on the hood.
Yeah.
Yeah. That,
well,
the funny thing, if Trump does get elected, is his first day in his office, he's going to go, do this, do that, do that. And everyone's going to go, no.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Exactly. Trump being such a pre-aware title, as the movie guys say, so already famous.
Right.
Even if it was just because he was on, you know, primetime TV for 10 years teaching Gary Busey how to work a snow cone machine. it's still famous enough that a cable, that's from my act. I thought you'd like that. That a cable station will say, yeah, yeah, put the freak show on, and they watch the ratings go up.
Right.
So then they cover more, and the noise, because the polls are noise meters, so the polls go up. Then they cover the polls. It's a feedback loop. And yeah, a lot of the coverage has been critical. You got to give him credit for that. He hasn't gotten all adoring coverage, but he's just, his creepy Trumpness has taken over the media debate about the election,
yeah,
which drowns out everybody else. There's a study during the primaries, he got 7 times more coverage than any other Republican candidate.
Yeah, well, he gets, I only know, it's like the coverage between him and Clinton is not 50-50. Yeah. You know, and
he's, the media people will say that he's also good at feeding us something to talk about every
day. Yeah.
You know, and Trump's figured out that even a train wreck about him is better than any coverage about anybody else.
Right.
So that he's just kind of taken it over.
Does, and now we does have fatigue outcome. Set in for oh, people yeah. at any point?
Months ago, I called him a zombie candidate. And on Twitter, at Murphy Mike, I'm constantly being told, you were wrong. He's no zombie. I go, no. Read what I said. A zombie candidate because he's never going to be president. He's lumbering around. He's making interesting noises. He's biting stuff. But as far as ultimately being the president, which is the only thing that really matters at the end of a presidential election, he's dead. I really don't believe the math is rotten. I think he'll get worse. I think fatigue will set in. And for all her problems, the Clinton machine will drop $1 billion on his head. And right. he'll still be flying around looking for a, you know, armory to go give a speech to 1,000 primary voters that are already going to vote for him. I mean, you could organize the 42% that a brick can get running for president with an R after their name, and it's a lot of big crowds, but you lose. It's all about the swing voters who are mostly college-educated white women and Latinos, neither of whom can stand Donald
right.
Trump.
Right, and the one thing that you don't see from him is an ability to change or grow or perhaps listen.
Right, because he's, you know, a narcissistic egomaniac. So
right. And he is a clinical narcissist.
Yeah.
If you read a textbook about it,
He's the atomic clock. You could set the diagnosis to him as perfection. Well, I'm a 92% Trump. Ooh, that's pretty bad. So my point is, it's all about him. There's no staff there. He's got a couple of advanced guys to make sure the blue curtain's up or the right kind of meatloaf is backstage for him. But ultimately, he'll just keep doing his thing. He doesn't know the world has changed from a Republican primary full of white guys over 45 to the big multicultural general election.
And, right.
You know, and so the system will beat him. The problem is we get Hillary without a challenge. And I'm not excited about Hillary. I think she's going to be a terrible president. I would like a right-of-center president, a conservative, to win because I think we'd do a better job for the country. Now, you know, we can argue about that. But there at least ought to be a contest. Instead, it's fixed. We're going to have mediocre Hillary, whether we want her or not, because Trump is a zombie.
Right. Now, so two questions. What would a right-of-center president do that would be better for the country than what you think Hillary Clinton would do?
Well, let me go to the example of what my close friend for many years, landslide Jeb Bush, was selling.
Now, we should say that you're very close with Jeb Bush.
Well, I did both his governor races. And I think you even asked Democrats down there. People say he was a very good governor of Florida. The point about Jeb was Jeb ran to put an idea in front of the country, and he knew it would be a bit of a long shot. Contrary, the press thought we were the super front runner because we were able to raise a lot of money. That just gave us a big microphone to get a message out. The key was we're not going to be a grievance candidate. We're not against anybody. We were for immigration reform. He was offended by that kind of language. Jeb came out against Trump when the other guys were hiding.
You know, yeah.
Marco Rubio was in the witness relocation program, even though he had been right where Jeb is on immigration.
Right.
So
no,
Jeb basically said...
And Jeb Bush, people, that his wife is Hispanic.
Yeah. So he was very open about that. But most importantly, he said, look, we've had a lost decade for the middle class. Wages aren't going up. People are working harder for less. We've had stagnant economic growth. We got a public school system that rips off half the kids that go to it. And there's a union colossus atop of it that
right.
makes it take 2 years and $3 million to fire a bad teacher, an awful teacher, a really bad teacher here in L.A. County. So we got to blow up these institutions. We got to have economic growth that people in the middle class feel again. We got to throw out the junky tax reform and all the corporate welfare. And we got to supercharge the economy so everybody can get ahead and schools and other public institutions to help people move up the ladder to the American dream, which is blocked now through all their mediocrity. It was a very positive message. There was deep policy to it. It was the opposite of a grievance candidate, mm-hmm. either Sanders or Trump or Cruz, who said all your problems are the fault of
XYZ,
communists, some right. guy named Juan who tunneled into the country. It's not your fault. You're great.
Right.
And totally different, and nobody voted for it in the primary.
Right.
But we're kind of proud. We're standing what we were for, and we're come back and try again in the rubble of what will be left of the Republican Party after this clown we're nominating is finished with it. We're going to lose the Senate. I hope not. There's a chance we can hold it, but mm-hmm. it's a tough chance. And we're going to lose House seats. We're hold the House, but it could be by single digits. So there will be – the sad thing is where the Republican Party, which has problems, and I'm part of the internal fight to – try to make it a more modern conservatism. We got problems, but we're going to have rubble now. So we get the opportunity to build something new, which is interesting, though the price we're going to pay is terrific.
I get enraged at the shit that he says that nobody else can. Can you imagine if Obama like looked at one of his daughters and go, yeah, if she wasn't related to me, I'd take a run at her. You know, it's like, you know, it's amazing.
He hasn't said that.
Yeah, he did. He did. It's on video. He did. You know, he could do anything. That's what he said. Like, you know, he could have sex with a baby on TV and people would defend him. You know? It's an anchor baby.
You can't pin
anything to him because he's going to do – it's worse. It's like criticizing Manson's fashion sense. Look at those clothes. Too much buckskin.
How does he get away with all this shit? Because
– I don't know.
They want it.
When does the fatigue set in? When do even his most ardent followers go, shut up? Even – I love cake so much. I was on the road for a week and a half, which I never go out for that long, but I had like a confluence of events. I had a thing for NPR in Minneapolis, and then I had a show in Denver, and then I had to go to Atlanta to location scout for the show Stand Against Evil premiering at IFC this fall, and then I had to go to the Austin Comedy Festival all in one thing, and I came home. I was gone a week and a half. I was so tired. I was so spent. My friend met me at the airport, drove me to my children's birthday party where I was meeting my daughter at her birthday party at Color Me Mine. And there was a birthday cake
there. You got
right
off the plane into a birthday party.
Right off the plane into a child's birthday party. I was so fried. And I remember just stuffing cake into my mouth. Like, oh, please make me feel better, cake. Please make me feel better, cake. But if I ate a whole wedding cake, I would get sick. At what point do we find ourselves eating the Fontina of the Trump wedding cake, which I believe is the name of the wax-like cover on wedding cakes? Isn't it called Fontina or something?
Is it like, Fontina?
Yeah, you ever go to wedding cakes? There's like this weird, hard – you ever eat a Bonbell cheese ball?
Yeah, I don't want to brag.
And they come in those
– Oh, the thing that covers the Bonbell
wedding cakes have this thing. You can eat it, but it's like – I think it's called Fontina.
Yeah.
And it just gives the cake its shape. I remember on my wedding day in Hawaii in 2000, just before the ceremony, we had the cake out there. And just before the ceremony, it rained. And it rained for the first time in like 8 months. And it was like a seven-minute shower. It was Hawaii.
In Hawaii,
it's over. But so it rains – and like we were like panicked, and everybody was like, all the locals, it's fine, wait, it'll be good, stop. So it stops, and then everybody goes to their seats, we wipe off all the seats, and everybody's getting ready to go, and all of these worms come up out of the ground to get the moisture, which hasn't been there in 6 months, and then all of these birds start attacking the worms.
This is right before your wedding?
Yeah, and I only know that because somebody told me after the ceremony that like a bird was flying away and it dropped a worm out of its mouth onto our cake. And so, get the worm off the cake. But, but that was Hakuna Matata, the circle of life just before we got married.
That's what I was thinking, that there was such great upheaval of nature created by your wedding.
Yeah, I know. And I got I turned wrong.
Yes.
Just before the ceremony. Two weird things happened.
I turned wrong.
You know, it's so weird. Did you read 11-22-63? The Stephen King book, 11-22-63?
No.
It's about a guy who goes back in time and
to try to stop the assassination.
Yeah, yeah. And what he finds is that time doesn't want to be changed.
Uh-huh.
And so that time works against him to change things. First time he tries it, he gets food poisoning. And then he gets in a car accident. Like, time works against him to affect this change.
Was it a good book?
It might be my favorite Stephen King book.
Really? And it's pretty recent.
It's very recent.
So he's still churning out decent stuff,
fantastic.
Huh?
Oh, he's so good. He's so good. But three things happened on my wedding day. One, we were in Hawaii and we're killing time before the afternoon. And my brother was there. My brother was my best man. And so a bunch of us were at the Four Seasons on Maui, hanging out in the morning. Mm-hmm. And okay, I just remembered another thing that happened. Four weird things happened on my wedding day.
Wow.
I'm sitting on the water fountain with my brother.
Does this all tie back into Trump?
I don't know. Yes. Well, it got onto Fontina. The cake Fontina.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sitting on the water fountain at the Four Seasons with my brother Kevin hours before my wedding ceremony. And I'm just kind of like, you're nervous. You've been there.
Yeah.
And a woman in a bikini walks by me. Stops right in front of me and adjusts her bikini bottom, just pulls it out and snaps it back. And it was like, God's like, there you go. There's your last one. That happened because I turned to my brother Kevin.
I wonder if she is hired by the hotel.
I don't know, maybe.
For weddings. But
I turned to my brother Kevin and went, that happened, right? That just happened. He goes, oh, yeah, that totally happened. Then there's a water slide at the hotel. My brother Kevin goes down the slide, and then the guy goes, okay, you can go. And then I go down the slide. And somehow we come out together, and everybody who was watching us that was in our party was staring at us like, oh my God. What happened was my brother got stuck, and he was pushing himself out. And then I came flying down behind him. And basically flew over him at the mouth of the slide.
No way. You flew over him?
Like 2 seconds later, and I would have broken my leg on his shoulders. I was like people were like, that would have hurt. You were flying.
How did he get stuck?
I don't know. It's my brother.
That's so hilarious.
Yeah. Then we had the crazy bird.
Three things.
Yeah.
This is all wedding day?
It's all my wedding day. Yeah. My mother had to go to the urgent care because she got an eye infection because, you know, she bought like mascara from like a Russian orphanage or something. Like, you know, she buys all of her shit out of like the back of witchcraft magazines. You know, it's like she bought some mascara that was like found in a dumpster in the Ukraine.
That's cheap.
Oh, and then the other thing was literally just before the ceremony, I turned and pulled a muscle in my hip. Like, I felt like, ow, and it never went away. And I thought, I really pulled a muscle. No. So
I've had something like that recently.
When I got back from a honeymoon, I went to the doctor and he goes, oh, you have a hernia. So literally moments before my wedding ceremony, my balls tried to jump out through my stomach lining.
Now,
but we did it.
That's interesting.
We killed the president.
There were definitely signs for you not to go through with it. I mean, there was
no. It was a good thing I did. Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, ultimately. No, that's a weird thing. Like, I'm divorced, but I'm really glad I got married. You know, so much of my life is my marriage. Still, we have children together, and we live close. And I don't think either one of us would have wanted to go back and undo it.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can't because time would have worked against you, as you now know.
And we know that no one will ever invent a time machine because if they do one day, they would have already come back to tell us.
What's to eat? What's to drink?
Good food galore.
Quick as a wink.
Ice cream bars. It's the handy way to enjoy smooth, rich, creamy ice cream. Get some.
Welcome to Political Talk with Two Guys from Boston, a working man's look at the socio-political issues of our day. And now, Political Talk with Two Guys from Boston.
This is Political Talk with Two Guys from Boston. I'm Johnny Condon.
Robbie Sullivan here.
So I'm talking to my some guy.
Yeah.
And he's for Bernie.
Oh,
he's all for Bernie.
Sure, feel the burn.
And I say, well, you know, if it Bernie doesn't get it, you're going to vote for Hillary. And he goes, I will not. I will not. And I go, well, look, buddy, if you support Bernie and you don't vote for Hillary.
Yeah.
Because you like Bernie.
That much.
That's kind of like a guy letting his house burn down because he's mad at the fire department. And his response was a very rational, reasoned, fuck yeah!
That's why you can see both sides of the political spectrum now. A highly developed and enlightened.
Lot of anger.
Oh, my God.
Lot of rage.
I don't even, you know, I say something like, well, I like Hillary in the store, and people just drop their groceries all over the place.
She's evil. Know. Well, look, she had a private email server.
Well, that's enough to put her in jail.
She should have been shot and right in the face.
I didn't even know what a private email server is.
I was,
you know, I'm happy when my phone rings. I don't need a freaking package to get the information through it. I got a computer. I'm not smart.
Something vaguely familiar about Donald Trump. I could not put my finger on it.
Yeah.
And then it hit me. He's Captain Lou Albano.
That's perfect. The hair looks good.
If you go back and watch real professional wrestling, he's Captain Lou.
Yeah.
Captain Lou.
My friend Shappy loved him growing up. Loved Captain Lou. Yeah, he thinks he's ravishing Rick Rude, though. That's what he thinks.
He thinks he's ravishing Rick Rude. He's barely Billy White Wolf.
That's right. Who is the guy?
He thinks he's Chief J. Strongbow, which you can't say anymore.
Who is the kid who fought Tyson years ago? And when they asked him right before the fight, like, you know, what's going to happen here? Because he was just another thug that's going to get beat up. He goes, with his only sentence that he's ever said in this life, it was his 15 seconds of fame. But he goes like this. He goes, I'm going to wrap Mike Tyson in a cocoon of horror. And then he got beat up in the first round. He's out.
Yeah, what is really going to happen? I'm going to die.
Exactly. But I have a good sentence for what I should say. My ma said it.
I'm going to die looking at the rafters of a large sports building.
That's right.
I don't want to die staring at rafters.
I want to die underneath the guy who bit a man.
Speaking of horrific ways to die, on the plane, they always say, in the event of a water landing, which is such a nicer way of saying screaming into the Atlantic.
Oh, geez. I am not going to be able to get that out of my head if I ever fly.
You know, it's sort of like the pilots are going to go, you know, it's a nice day. It's a little warm. Let's land in the bay.
You know, the plane doesn't get to cool off. Let's just cool off. We'll come right up and right back in.
They were going to wash the plane, but I thought I'd do them a favor. Let's have a water landing.
The only plane I was on this year, it was frozen. So they're having trouble with something, and then they start pouring this like soapy stuff all over the plane to get the thing to come down. But by the time they finish, it happened again. It's so cold and there's so much whatever.
Yep.
They can't move. So they keep telling you it's fine. But we can't leave. But it's fine. But we can't leave. But it's fine.
It's fine. You're going to be fine. We can't leave.
And now we're leaving. And all I can think is that the plane wings are going to fall off. Like they're frozen. They're just, oh, sorry. We're fine.
Remember Bobby Putnam.
Bobby Putnam. Jeez.
Bobby Putnam's brother. I can't remember his name. Billy.
Billy Putnam. Yes.
Right. All the kids had Brenda, Barbara, Bobby, and Billy. Yeah. God, you know, you're naming a kid. Give it 5 minutes. Give it, you know, take 5 minutes.
Yeah. You took 5 minutes to make him, would you?
Well, Billy went out. You might not remember. Billy went out to Colorado. He wanted to be a snowboarder.
Oh, weird.
6 months into it, he realized that it wasn't a job.
That's a Boston dream.
He just kept going down to the mailbox, and there was never a check.
Was he getting better?
I guess, but I don't know. This isn't work.
That's nobody's hired you for this.
Who's coming? Who's going to give you money?
The trees on the mountain sends me checks.
Yeah, you know, the 527.85 FICA removed, courtesy the Winter Warlock.
That's really funny. And know, some of those skateboarders and snowboarders get deals.
Yeah,
but that's because they're really good.
And they go find them.
Exactly.
You know, just,
they're not in the woods.
Yeah, they don't just show up check. In the mailbox.
Yeah,
but he got delayed coming home because of hail.
Oh,
hail damage to the plane.
Oh wow!
And you know the real nightmare: bird strikes.
Oh, is that right?
All these planes, they fly through flocks of birds.
Jeez.
And the birds mess up the planes because they hit them. It's like a reverse bullet.
Oh, my God.
The plane is going so fast that when the bird hits it, it's like a shell.
It picks up that speed.
Yeah, yeah. It's just reverse. It would be like if you just took a bullet and put it on a post in your yard and ran at it.
As fast as I could.
700 miles an hour.
It's going to hit me pretty hard.
It would appear that you
right
were shot.
My chest.
It would
yeah.
appear that you were shot.
That is weird. So I've never heard that. Is that because they don't want us to fear this?
I think, yeah.
And folks, remember, if we see a flock of birds, say goodbye to your neighbor.
Exactly right. It's the same effect with, have you ever been parked in your car and then the guy next to you starts to back out and you think you're rolling.
What am I doing? Yeah,
it's a
visual impairment.
That's right. And your eyes tell your brain you're moving and then your brain tells your body to feel like you're moving, but it's all a lie.
Yeah, that's happened to me with a date once.
She wanted to back out. I thought it meant that we were moving forward. I've had that happen more than
exactly.
once.
She's backing away and I think I'm heading in. Good night, folks. Thanks for coming by.
And another night cuddled to pillows.
Exactly.
Cuddling pillows.
I bring
the
up,
Johnny Condon saga.
I bring up Rumi, a poet from 12 AD, and start feeling enlightened. It's the only move.
My only move is just putting on Van Morrison, and maybe she thinks I'm smart.
The Astral Weeks or one of the bad albums?
I put on Moondance.
Oh, yeah. That's the favorite.
Yeah.
Everyone loves it.
You look at him on the cover of Moondance, and you think, oh, I know how he's going to turn up. That nose ain't getting any less red. This guy's...
He likes just, his pints.
Oh, it looks like a young Tip O'Neill is what that looks like.
Oh, my God. Tip O'Neill. You remember growing up trying to figure it out? Like, is he on the good side, the bad side, or the indifferent?
Well, they didn't care as much back then.
Yeah.
Like, they went to work and they would...
Mayor White.
I don't want to bang the
drum.
I don't want to bang the drum of the obvious. But you do look at these hardcore Trump people, and it is like the Joker and his minions. Like if this was Batman, they'd all be in matching sweatshirts with their nickname on the front.
And I want to go back in the backstory like they do on TV now with Batman and see how Barney Frank was the young man who was going to turn into a superhero.
That's right. All I know is at Trump headquarters, the floor is slanted like the Joker's hideout.
You know, that there's some woman who left a couple weeks back, and she was like, it's a runaway train that I had to get off of, but he didn't know he was going to do this well. Like her,
she left the Trump campaign.
She left the Trump campaign and basically said, like, you know, family reunions are great. This ain't that. I'm out. And she
It is amazing. No, they do. They make Ted Cruz look like the nice guy, which is important.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Is that the guy they're calling the Zodiac Killer or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah. That worked.
He looks so much like Grandpa Munster. It's unnerving.
He's the Grandpa Munster in our Batman reboot.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, I know she's a woman and I have to approach it with kid gloves, but if you can tell the difference between Carly Fiorina and the Phantom of the Opera, I'll give you $500.
If I knew what either one of those things were, I'd give you 10.
She looks like the face you'd find underneath the mask of a face that somebody had torn off them against their will.
That's nice.
I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to be sorry. That's actually nice. I think that's nice. It's
Hillary Clinton's no beauty. Larry Flint is not offering her $1 million to pose.
You know what I like about Hillary? I was wondering if you knew.
You know what Hillary is? She's Shemp.
Okay, fair
she's
enough.
She's not curly.
But you still get to watch.
But she's not Joe. And you know? No,
not
she's not curly.
So hard, Republicans.
Yeah. She's not so
no.
hard. Is she curly? No. But
no.
Is she Joe? No.
She's Shemp.
She'll be fine
That's
for the
nice.
Time that she's on.
I'll tell you, when she was on there, she was like Hillary Clinton against the whole Congress and Senate or whatever it was, and they were all attacking her, and I watched it, and she was the only one that was smart. Everyone else just looked like, oh, she got me.
And they
were there to attack her, but she knew what she was doing.
She's
she was
got
smart.
A set on her.
Yeah, she's a smart woman.
James Cobble once said, if Hillary Clinton gave Barack Obama one of her balls, they'd both have two.
Ha! That's funny. I like
I believe him.
Cavill's the best.
I would not want to go up against her.
No, that's the man
I mean, the one thing you have to say about her, and I, you know, again, letting that Patterson ship.
Yeah.
I am not a Trump supporter.
No.
I am not a Cruz supporter. There were some people that were running in the Republican side. I thought, well, fine.
Yeah, Kasich.
Kasich, I thought, was fine.
He'll Jeb never
Bush,
make it.
I thought Jeb Bush was fine.
Kasich's like the guy who doesn't even understand the rose ceremony.
But this is how far we've come. When the most you can say about somebody is to be the leader of the free world, he's not crazy.
But no one who would want to actually do this job should do it.
No. And you know? And you've got to be crazy to get.
I like the craziness of Cavill.
You know, he would
be a great
president.
He's too smart to do that.
Look, I know. I was on the road with him, and he had to go to the bathroom, and he totally found a bathroom. He didn't just stand there clenching his fist and making wet. No, he totally used a toilet. He could totally be president. People go bananas. But you see these really hardcore Trump supporters. They are not going to go quietly. And I think it's going to be, if he gets a nomination, which I think it will, it's going to be a fairly historic loss.
Yes. I think if he does get it, a lot of people are going to bring out their white hoods and say, thank God we're back.
Right. And then everybody else is going to go, I don't know. There's not enough angry older white people.
You know, I remember when we were kids, we had that part where it was like, don't blame me. I'm from Massachusetts, which meant we were the
only state
to vote for McGovern. Yeah. So
I think Trump will get your Arkansas's.
Yes.
Not Arkansas, because, well, maybe.
The middle class still votes for the upper class's rules in case they ever make it there.
That's exactly right.
And that's the problem we're having now.
We don't have poor people in this country. We have temporarily embarrassed, not millionaires yet.
Financially challenged families.
But I think that that's what we say about Hillary. She's Shemp. No, she's not curly.
I like that.
But she's better than Joe.
I never minded Shemp. I couldn't watch Joe through a whole episode.
No, I couldn't watch Joe. And, you know, a lot of times during Shemp, sometimes you have to just focus on Larry.
That's the name of our book together. Focus on Larry.
And Larry, when Shemp and Mo were going at it, hammer and tong.
Oh, yeah.
Larry was a wealth of reaction shots that were enjoyable in and of their own right.
His hair. He could just shoot his bald head with the two pieces of hair and bang, we got gold.
You know, you could basically sum up 95% of Larry's work in the Stooges as, what'd you do that for, Mo? Hey, Mo.
Remember Saturday mornings? We used to actually sit there and say the lines before they did.
Remember the Three Stooges cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
I always wondered how the Three Stooges felt because they weren't their own voices on their own cartoon. And I wondered, like, Mo, you know, he's up. He's a Saturday morning. You know, he's an old guy, so he probably woke up at about 5.
Yeah.
Why do old people get up so goddamn early?
You know, it might be the last day.
It might be the last one. I want to get hit it running.
I feel that way now.
And you go in and it turns on the TV and there's me, but it's not. That's... That must lead you to some form of existential crisis.
It can't be easy.
It's like if you woke up one day and there was like, you're calling your boss, sorry, I'm late. You're already here.
Wait, what?
And there's another one of you there.
And they're not as funny.
And therefore much more successful.
And they're doing a parody of your voice, which has got to feel good.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's the way they
think
of me?
That's what people want me to.
Wait a minute. I'd rather you do Yakov Smirnoff for me than Joe. Oh, I don't remember. Was there any Joes or Shrimps in those? Or was it all curly now that there's a cartoon?
No, I think it was all curly. Because, you know, if you
can get them.
If you don't have to, if you can fake it all.
If you can get a shortstop in the first draft.
Yeah. There wouldn't be a Who cartoon with Kenny Jones on the drums.
The Beatles cartoon with Pete Best.
The Beatles cartoon with the guy that took Ringo's place when he had laryngitis.
That's funny.
I wonder if Paul McCartney's first words every morning are, is Ringo dead yet?
Because then I'm going to really mop up.
He's just supposed to be the last one.
Oh, of course he does. I wouldn't be too surprised if that's what's behind the
stand
whole
on all of their graves.
Movement.
Success.
My friend worked at the Garden, which is no longer the Garden, but I can't stop calling it that.
Now it's Vesuvia Lawn Stadium.
Near North End, I call it. Yeah. He used to work there, and he said when McCartney came in with those people, like they had to take all the meat out of the freezers. And nothing could be served to the public that was meat. No meat
in the whole building.
In the whole building, no meat at all.
And oddly, the company that they recommended was the one started by his wife.
Isn't that funny that would all work out for him?
Worked out good.
Yeah, that was really good. So now, spend your million on that food and sell it here. Now we'll do a show here. And they all did it.
Paul needed the money.
Does he?
Yeah. In his defense.
Just for his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can understand that. He looks like an old aunt.
Trump is Lou Albano. Ted Cruz is Grandpa Munster.
Yeah.
Colly Fiorina is a fan of the opera.
Good.
Bernie Sanders is Maude.
Only he's not as tough.
But is it Arthur? Arthur, college should be free, Arthur.
Oh, that's really good.
It's hard to place Hillary. She's sort of a cross between the wife from Bonnie Miller.
Okay.
And the boss from Alice.
I see her as the woman on One Day at a Time, the mother.
Bonnie Franklin?
Yeah. Oh, she's my Bonnie Franklin.
Oh, bless her
Always
heart.
Has been. I loved Bonnie. I loved her daughters.
Redhead.
Yeah, but, you know, if you think
they're
about...
They're all crazy.
If you think of Bonnie Franklin 20 years after that show, kind of looks
like... Oh,
Bonnie.
Yeah, I'm I just can saying, see that.
If she got so politically heavy that she yep. can't get healthy, that's the look.
The mother from the movie Breaking Away, but punching her palm.
Oh, my God, the bicycle movie. I loved that film.
Can you imagine when Bill Clinton got caught with Monica Lewinsky that first night? Hi, Hill. Oh, it is amazing that the Secret Service were not called in to protect his life. Seriously, because it's their job is to protect the president.
Yeah.
He goes home and they know that someone is at home waiting to kill him.
Yeah. And they go ahead, Bill. You're fine.
At what point do they go, I think we have to let her.
We should at least mic the room.
I wonder what happened.
Be ready to burst in like the mayor in Washington.
Exactly. There had to have been a safe word like, scream apples, come in. Hill, apples!
Hill apples.
They pig pile up. Get him out of here.
Oh.
She threw a lamp. Get him out of here.
No, he had also been the governor for a long time. And you know, just because social media wasn't prevalent, I have a feeling there's probably some skeletons back in those closets.
Oh, look.
But hey, man, I like the way the guy looks at the world. He's out there trying to help. I've never not liked Bill.
I think he's dipped his wick in a lot of wax.
Well, fair enough.
But that's fine. If you look at Ted Cruz, the first thing I think is, Jesus, I wish he'd get laid.
When you also got to look at it at Hillary as somebody who's the wax has hardened.
Yeah.
Might not be as easy.
She's not. Yeah, she doesn't care anymore.
No. That's what I mean.
She's above it.
She's above it, but she also understands their allegiance in history is important, and let's cherish the man for all the positives. Each thing we do is only 1/1000th of who we are. This doesn't sum up that man.
I agree, and I will say this. Hillary has gotten to the point where I think if she's elected president in the second term, she will have reached a state where she just evolves into a beam of pure energy.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah, that's what perfect. I think.
I would vote. For a beam of energy.
There's too much ambition there for a human body. She's just...
I don't think a beam of energy would need a super pack.
No, I think she just comes in like a beam of energy.
I love
burns
it.
Burns through the wall.
Sure.
Explodes the TV cameras. And
then
we all stay in line.
Collects it into a little ball and puts it away till the morning.
And she has to summon the energy to articulate her voice. She's like, just do what the fuck I say.
I like that.
I wouldn't mind it.
No.
Political Talk with two guys from Boston.
Please remember to replace the speaker on the post when you leave the theater.
One of the big problems with politics, the law of unintended consequences. When actions, particularly those taken on a large scale, say, by a government, has, well, unexpected consequences. These are reactions. They may be positive, they may be negative, they may be merely neutral. But they veer off from the intent of the initial action. In the 1960s, the Great Society was supposed to solve all the poverty in America. Didn't work. Gave us housing projects. Tax cuts for the rich were supposed to grow the middle class. How's that going? The Iraq War was going to be over quick, pay for itself. All of these, quote, on the surface, unquote, good ideas, suffered from the law of unintended consequences. Now, no movie gives us a better view in microcosm, of the law of unintended consequences, than Sam Fuller's 1963 masterpiece, Shock Corridor.
The motion picture screen opens the door to sights you've never seen before. Shock Corridor.
Shock Corridor is, if nothing else, a meditation on the folly of hubris. How's that? Peter Breck, later of the Big Valley, plays Johnny Barrett, an overly ambitious newspaper reporter who hungers for a Pulitzer Prize. And he has stumbled upon a novel, if dangerous, way to get it. He has himself committed to an insane asylum to investigate an unsolved murder. But to fully understand Shock Corridor, you have to understand Sam Fuller. What? You never heard of Sam Fuller? You know Dasher and Dancer and Comet. Okay. Sam Fuller was born in 1912 in Worcester, Massachusetts, about 10 minutes from yours truly. Sam didn't speak until he was 5 years old, and his first word was hammer. Sam's father died when he was only 12. Not his father, Sam. The family relocated to New York City. Sam had to work, and he became a newspaper copy boy. He rose through the ranks, becoming a full-fledged crime reporter for the New York Evening Graphic at the age of 17. Later in life, Sam's approach to filmmaking would be informed by his tabloid reporter upbringing. He would say, "I learned early on, it's not the headline, but how hard you shout it." And that was Sam Fuller, a cigar-chomping, no-holds-barred man's man. Whether working as a journalist, a novelist, a screenwriter, a director, he toiled in the fields of mankind's underbelly, telling the stories of two-bit criminals, pickpockets, prostitutes. As Mr. Rogers might say, those were the people in his neighborhood. Sam Fuller painted their stories in bright primary colors and screamed them in bold headline type. By the age of 22, Sam had started supplementing his reporter's income by writing pulp crime novels, and from there moved into writing screenplays. His career went on hiatus at the start of World War II when he enlisted in the Army. Sam spent the war seeing endless heavy fighting in the 1st Infantry Division, which was known as the Big Red One for the uniform insignia they wore. Fuller fought in campaigns in Africa, Sicily, Normandy, and more. In 1945, he was present at the liberation of the German concentration camp at Falkenau in Czechoslovakia. He shot footage of the atrocities on his 16mm camera. Much of this footage, the ovens, the bodies stacked like cordwood, and even harder to endure, the condition of the survivors, was used in the documentary Falkenau, The Impossible. In 1980, Fuller made the autobiographical film The Big Red One that starred Lee Marvin and Mark Hamill. One of the more powerful moments in that film occurs during the recreation of the liberation of the concentration camp, when Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, is forced to confront the real dark side, and he has no magical powers on hand to fight it off. After World War II, Sam Fuller went back to filmmaking. One of his post-war screenplays, Shock Proof, was directed by none other than Douglas Sirk, famous for Imitation of Life and All That Heaven Allows. Fuller hated it. So much so that when his next deal came around, a three-picture contract with an independent producer named Robert Lippert, Fuller agreed only if Lippert would allow him to direct the films at no extra charge. The first movie he made, with a provocative title, I Shot Jesse James, was a hit. And this was followed by the Vincent Price Western, you heard me right, Baron of Arizona. Fuller's third film was an early masterwork, Steel Helmet. It was, to begin with, a film about the Korean War, made during the Korean War. It also caused quite a stir in several circles. The Army objected to it because in the film, the American soldiers shoot a POW. But Fuller defended it, saying he'd seen it happen. Other critics attacked the film for being pro-communist, which Fuller scoffed at. One side note about Steel Helmet. Martin Scorsese is a huge fan of the film and claims to have designed several shots in Raging Bull, boxing fights. Several of those shots are based directly on Steel Helmet's battle scenes. The success of Steel Helmet brought Fuller to the attention of Daryl F. Zanuck and 20th Century Fox, who signed him to a 7-picture deal. Among the films in this deal, the Richard Widmark noir classic Pick Up on South Street, a Fuller masterwork about the low-level, amoral criminal underclass, the pickpockets, the hookers, that Fuller dealt with in his journalism days. Pick Up on South Street is interesting for its day, because unlike other noir thrillers of that period, the early 50s, every character in the film is an unrepentant piece of shit. They have no moral compass, they have no remorse, and they learn nothing. Everybody loses, the end. Fuller's contract at Fox ended right around the time studio head Daryl Zanuck got the boot, a story told in an earlier episode of this very podcast, and Fuller found himself pounding the pavement looking for a patron. Allied Artists was not 20th Century Fox. The budgets were super, super, super tight, but they let Fuller do what he wanted. And the two films he made there were quintessential Sam Fuller. The Naked Kiss, about a prostitute who tries to change her life by working in a pediatric ward, and Shock Corridor. Shock Corridor tells the tale of how a sane man's overweening ambition puts him into a situation where he is slowly driven insane. The film itself plays like a fever dream. It opens with Peter Brecht's reporter Johnny Barrett admitting to his sexual fantasies about his own sister. Risky stuff for 1963. It is later revealed that this is all part of a scam. This is Johnny's plan to go undercover in a mental hospital where he's going to solve a murder and get the Pulitzer Prize.
Case history number one. Johnny B., brilliant newspaper reporter, suffering from hallucinations that his sweetheart is his sister. Diagnosis, erotic dementia.
She has to pretend to be the sister in question and file a report with the police to get Johnny committed. What's amazing is Johnny's girlfriend, played by Constance Towers. She could not look more waspy. Blonde hair, a thin aquiline nose. Constance Towers was who you cast to play a bank president's bitchy daughter. But in Shock Corridor, she's a stripper.
Case history number two, Kathy B. Strip teaser, young, intelligent, beautiful.
Do you think I like singing in that sewer with a hot light on my navel? I'm doing it because it pays more than shorthand or clerking or typing.
I know that.
Kathy's torrid performances, however, reveal her avid reaction to the excitement of male audiences. Diagnosis? Manic sensualist.
Oh, who isn't? Kathy B., an arrogant reporter's stripper girlfriend. A stripper who haunts Johnny in his cell at night as he conjures images of his love in the wee, small, lonely hours. Once Johnny goes into the hospital, it's a race against time. Can he solve the murder and secure his precious Pulitzer Prize before he himself goes insane? For you see, as Ken Kesey would illustrate later in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a sane person cannot live among the insane indefinitely. An insane society will corrupt the sane individual until they conform to the norms as they perceive them. Enjoy your Pulitzer, Johnny. Too bad they won't let you out of your padded cell to enjoy it. Sam Fuller, Tribune of American Lowlifes, especially when they occupied high places. Now maybe you'd like to see Shock Corridor, or The Naked Kiss, or Steel Helmet, or The Baron of Arizona, or The Big Red One, or any one of Sam Fuller's many excellent films. You might want to read some of his beautiful pulp novels, like Brainquake. It's easy. Go to danagould.com, click on our Amazon banner, and shop away. You get what you want, and for no extra charge, we get a couple extra beans to keep the lights on here. Also, try going to the homepage at danagould.com. You'll see options to donate to the show or subscribe through PayPal. Every cent goes back into the show. I promise you, no one is making a fucking dime here. We appreciate anything you can do. Last but not least, visit our store at comedyfilmnerds.com for signed Dana Gould Hour merchandise, including our new t-shirt, which I didn't sign. I'm not going to sign a t-shirt, but it's got a beautiful design by the great Ben Walker. comedyfilmnerds.com. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the average price. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to the consumer. They make an obsessively engineered mattress at a shockingly fair price. Mattresses can often cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost just $500. For a twin-size mattress, only $950 for a king-sized mattress. And all Casper mattresses are made right here in Merca. They have a risk-free trial and return policy. Try sleeping on a Casper for 100 days with free delivery and painless returns. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper, CASPER.com/Dana and using the promo code Dana.
Make sure you get yours and enjoy it now.
It's 1 minute till showtime.
This is Groucho Marx. A few days ago, I was talking with the director of civil defense, and he told me some things that I feel everyone should know. Did you know, for example, that your chances of surviving an atom bomb attack are excellent? It's true. Keep a complete first aid kit handy. Keep a closed container of drinking water in your refrigerator, enough for 3 days. Take a look around your house right now and pick out the safest spot, away from windows and doors. Make sure that every member of your family understands he is to rush to that safe spot when there's danger. I'm convinced that these precautions are necessary right now. They're important to your family, yourself, and your community.
Settle back now, content, comfortable, well-fed, and ready for some fine entertainment. Is everybody happy? Then let's go. It's showtime.
You know, there is no Democratic analogy to Trump because George McGovern, although he got his...
He was more of a Cruz. He was what the grassroots really wanted.
Yeah, professional politician. He was
a Democratic
rational
party.
Adult.
Yeah. Look, I was saying for 2 years that Cruz was our McGovern. And he would have lost 40 states too.
Right.
But when it came down to Trump and Cruz, as much as I don't like Cruz, I was for Cruz because I figured Trump would be a disaster for the country while Cruz would only be a disaster for our party. And it would be a disaster that was organic. I mean, we've been hearing from Cruz forever, his wing of the party.
Right.
Well, the reason we lose is you nominate these guys like Mitt Romney and millions of conservatives stay on Pluto. Yeah.
They don't stay home.
No, it's absolutely specious. I mean,
right. They've been saying you just need to elect somebody really conservative
like
and we'll win.
Secret vote.
It's the same thing that you get on the left. Like Bernie will win.
Yeah,
because we'll all vote for him unless we're at an air guitar contest.
Most people with opinions about politics, and this is totally legit and as American as apple pie, is through the lens of, well, you got to appeal to people like me.
Right.
You know, all my friends are for Bernie, so you get Bernie, everybody will vote for him because everybody's like me. Everybody's not like you.
Right.
And it's a math business, and those of us who do it professionally, the ones of us who know something from experience anyway, can kind of look at the math and kind of know what happens. You basically, to win, you got to attract people not like you.
Right.
And that's the lost lesson of this.
And that is, you know, and my particular opinion about, you know, my approach is like, I have a certain set of beliefs, I have a certain set of values. But I also know that the rest of the country doesn't share my particular beliefs and values. Yeah. And
L.A. hot tub values.
Exactly.
Or, as I sit in the wolf's lair with the California foliage and the marijuana smoke drenched Hollywood Hills.
I know.
Yeah. Was there a porn murder here? I kind
of
get the
yes,
vibe.
Of course.
Yeah.
Proudly so.
Yeah, exactly.
As we sit here doing blow off my mirrored dining room table.
Exactly.
But
can one of these hookers bring me a martini, please?
But I also, yeah, it's like you have to accommodate people that don't agree with you. It's not just my way or the highway. Right. And I think that, you know, as they say, like if no one's happy, then it's probably good. You know,
yeah, well,
if no one's happy, then you're probably somewhere in the right area.
Politics is supposed to be a mechanism to fairly reach consensus without gunfire.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of why we have it. And when both sides polarize so much and don't know each other and politics just becomes a playing field for mutual destruction, Chinese are going to run the table and run the world. And,
right.
You know, we can kind of like sit and I do this all the time and kind of giggle at Trump or roll my eyes at Bernie, but we're the only hyperpower in the country. There are still 400 nuclear weapons pointed at us from the old Russia.
Right.
And we're building some new ones. We are the metronome beat that keeps the world from going absolutely batshit.
Yes.
And we're the reserve currency. We get away with a lot because when people are scared other places, they hold dollars. And when we start looking like a two-bit banana republic, you know, you're pulling the thread from the very big sweater.
Yes.
And if you think it's a bummer to have college debt, you know, it's a real bummer. Land wars in Asia.
Right.
So the stakes in this thing are so much higher than kind of our stupid pop culture treatment of it.
Yeah, there's a lot more at stake here than where Caitlyn Jenner shits.
Yeah, oh, tremendously.
Yeah.
Because we're it. I mean, our allies around the world are scared shitless because, you know, wait a minute. It's kind of like growing up and your dad is kind of a square, comes home every day, bills get paid, there's right. some order, and all of a sudden dad's running around in a diaper rubbing shit in his hair out in the front lawn.
That's exactly.
What do the 8-year-olds think?
That is exactly. Yeah. The analogy I was going to make, and I'm not lying, that the rest of the world looks at is like, it's like, as if your dad just came home one day and said, I think I'm going to start beating the fuck out of your mother. What? Yeah. You know, he will say anything. We might pull out a NATO. He didn't understand the difference between the deficit.
I'm not going to pay back the U.S. debt. I'm sure there are four dead Chinese central bankers who jumped out of a building somewhere.
Right. I'm sure he didn't. Well, he also didn't understand that there was a difference between the debt and the deficit.
No. What the guy knows how to do is buy gold toilets in bulk and flip parking lots in Manhattan.
Right.
He's the King Kong of that. And I know people who work for him. When we were doing the super PAC, we took a real interest in Trump, and we were ready, once we'd cleared our own lane, which we failed at doing, but had we done that, to really take him on. We already ran more heads against him than anybody. And he's a lousy businessman.
Yes.
He doesn't believe in anything, and he's a narcissistic crackpot.
Yes.
And the more you learn about him, it's bad. What really bugs me about Trump, and I've read a book called Trump years ago, written by one of his casino executives, which I highly recommend. You can buy it on used bookstore for $1.50. It's quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he's one of these guys who doesn't know what he doesn't know and has no interest in learning.
Yes. He's
just
very,
what I want in a president.
You know? Yes, it's very dangerous. And I find that you can say all of that and his followers don't care. Make anything stick.
Wait for the first debate. You may get it, but
it took me a second.
So,
but I mean, it's like you can explain to people. Like,
what
my
would the Secret Service do if they got in a fight?
My mom is a staunch Trump supporter. I mean, like, you know, it's like this is also a woman that raised 6 children with no help from my father, and now I don't trust her with a butter knife. But. You know, you can say all of that, and it just doesn't get into there.
But here's. There's a weird legitimacy in some of it. And same thing in Bernie. It's parallel universes. There's an old horseshoe theory of politics that if you get all the way to the right and like hiccup, then you turn into a communist or vice versa.
Uh-huh.
And Bernie supporters and Trump supporters are different demographically, old and young, and they're different ideologically, right and left, but they're the same, just like Wallace and McGovern supporters were in their alienation from the system.
Yes.
So Trump people are picking up Trump as a club to hit the system with. It's not so much love of Trump. It's love of the idea that he's going to blow up those sons of bitches in Washington who don't do anything.
Right.
He's going to blow up the fact the country's changing in ways I don't like. He's going to blow up the fact that I now have somebody to blame for all my problems, some alien force that came in. I'm a victim. And so there's a lot of that in this country because the middle class has been screwed for a long time. Excuse me.
Right.
There's a lot of that in this country because the middle class has been screwed for a long time. And so Trump is kind of a blunt instrument of rage.
And if he is elected, for whatever happens, you know, solar flares.
Right. There is a scenario.
And he accomplishes nothing. They will just go, we'll see. They won't let him do it.
Yeah, it was a conspiracy.
Yeah,
they took away his meatloaf.
You know, Bill Maher said something about Obama early on when he criticized him and people went bananas. He's like, he's not your boyfriend. He's flawed too. Tort reform should have been a part of the healthcare thing.
Again, I think the numbers are so rough on Trump and the reality will catch up with him that I think it's extremely unlikely he could win. The only thing I worry about is a black swan scenario where there's some kind of peristyle attack in the U.S. right before the election, and there's some kind of spasmatic reaction.
Right.
The other problem is Hillary is such a horrible candidate. It gives me a migraine headache to think about this because I hate the outcome so much. But if Hillary were smart, she would stop screaming at rallies and trying to imitate Bernie and instead do more of a two-way conversation thing, which she's much better at, with people around her who reflect America. and go out and open a writer's room here in L.A. and get a bunch of joke guys and hire some young comics and train a couple of congressmen just to follow Trump around with insult comedy every day. Because Trump would respond, and then she'd be up at 30,000 feet. I mean, I'm waiting for, you know, just to do his... Because he's basically doing like a bad Rickles, Don King, or Alan King bit.
Right.
And give it to him. Give it to him right back. He'll spend the first half of his rallies responding to it. You know, Trump's Secret Service code name ought to be Spanx. that's a Dennis Miller-style joke there. But he'd go nuts, and you could tie him up that way.
Yeah, and he can't not
respond. My worry is that she'll try to turn herself into a Trump, and God, that'll be awful, and well, she'll be worse at it.
And that is one of the problems that she has. And, you know, she is still fighting a primary against a candidate who can't win and won't quit.
But yet has, could win if the superdelegates change their mind. Highly unlikely.
Highly unlikely.
Because in the elected delegates, it's a close race between Clinton and Bernie. But, you know, the superdelegates, which we don't have on the Republican side, that's a little Democratic convention. That way the wisdom of Donna Brazile is, you know, preserved forever, even though nobody has elected her to opine.
Right.
Hillary's problem is that Bernie can't really beat her under the current superdelegate constellation. But Bernie owns voters under 35 in the Democratic Party. And these finicky millennials don't always like to show up to vote.
Right.
Great thing for my side. But so Hillary has the problem, to quote the old Russian proverb, she has to wash the bear without getting his fur wet.
Right.
She
has
to smother Bernie without pissing off his people.
Right.
Which is going to be tricky because that turnout dynamic in a general election is part of her formula to win. My guess is she'll create a fight at the convention for the Bernie folks to put that energy into, which would be smart. Maybe getting rid of superdelegates once and for all. Give them a new crusade that's not screw Hillary.
Right.
Because they need a crusade or they go away.
And there is a point. I mean, if you look at how profoundly the Tea Party has influenced the Republican Party and how Occupy Wall Street has done nothing, it gives you an example of the importance of follow through.
Well, the same drivers.
Yeah.
But what's happened
but
to
one,
us is
one showed up on election day and one went to an air guitar contest.
We also had more candidates who could carry that. Trump, Cruz, you know, that what Rubio tried a little bit. And so there was a vessel to contain the point of view. I would argue that some of Bernie's gas is the same as Occupy Wall Street.
That's what I mean. But yeah. I don't know if there's the follow through and the commitment to show up.
Right. If there weren't superdelegates, though, in the Democratic side, it would be California would decide the race.
Right.
We'd be on fire right now.
Right.
All the California political acts are so pissed off. For the first time in decades, the money train's finally coming through town. And then, boom, it all died in... beforehand.
And the other thing about Bernie is people always say, well, he beats Trump in all of the polls, but he's not been defined yet for the general. And let me say the unspeakable. I think a lot of Republicans have not criticized Bernie Sanders for a very good reason. I think they would love to run against Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I think Bernie would be pretty vulnerable. Here's a little inside trick about summer polls. The value of figuring out an election based on summer polls is the same as getting crap's advice from the drunkest guy at the bar in the casino.
Right.
Because the polls are just a noise meter now. The best thing is most people's voting is kind of predetermined by history. 42-43% of the people in the country, thank God love them, will vote for a Republican no matter what. About 45 for a Democrat no matter what. And then, you know, you've got the rest that are persuadable, though historically they tilt one way or the other. These days more Democratic.
Yeah.
So the election is really only about one out of every eight people.
Yeah.
And that swing group takes all the stimulation of the election and waits till the end and then votes. So polls until really after the presidential debates aren't that predictive. But the media's in the polling business. I often joke that if I ever got the particularly interesting job of being the head of Red Chinese Intelligence, I would...
That would be a stretch.
Yeah. No. Comrade X, I would immediately spend a lot of money bribing media pollsters because where these noise meter polls go totally drives the coverage.
Right.
Totally. And the conventional wisdom, because the hairspray brigade on television... I'm too bold to have hairspray or I'd be a card-carrying member. They read the poll average in the morning and then reverse engineer opinions to look smart. Not that they know any. Now, I'm not talking about everybody. There are exceptions. But a lot of them, one minute they're covering the flood, the next minute the space launch, and then they got to be smart about politics. Well, the polls sure, you know, and they just repeat conventional wisdom trope.
Right.
So watch that polling. It's a little misleading.
When you start talking about time, going back in time and time machine and time warps and all that stuff, my brain starts to just absolutely get fried conceptually.
It's the one thing I want. There's a video I threw on my Facebook page of just this beautiful Kodachrome film of somebody driving down Sunset Boulevard in 1963 from like where Tower Records was to Doheny. Nice. And they go by the whiskey before it was the whiskey.
Yeah. Wow. And
it's just 63. It's a beautiful sunny day in 1963. And they're just filming, driving down Sunset. And it's just like, it's gorgeous. It's like, I want to go back. I want to do it. See, that's why I loved that book so much.
Yeah.
The idea of going back in time just thrills me.
Boy, LA would be so less crowded.
The 9000 building isn't there. There's all this weird stuff.
That's because
I
have
to show it to you. It's really
amazing. I even love doing that, like watching old episodes of Columbo.
I do that all the time. That's on MeTV. Like, like you watch Dragnet and you're like, oh, CVS was a baby shoe store. Yes. And the bank was an Arco. Yeah, I love all that
I feel
stuff.
Like an old person now because that's all I do is like stop the tape. I still call it tape. Stop the, the DVR and just like go through like, holy shit, this is in the valley. Columbo is in the valley at the gas station that we go to at the corner of Moore Park, blah, blah, blah.
And yeah, like, Adam 12 is big on that too. A lot of Adam 12.
Oh, is that right? Adam 12?
Yeah, a lot of neighborhoods in Van Nuys. And it's so funny because the TV shows that I watch that give me
comfort,
my video mac and cheese, so to speak, mm-hmm. are not the shows from my childhood. They're not the shows that were on in the late 70s.
Yeah.
They're the shows that I watched in the late 70s, which were reruns of shows from the 60s. So like I watch Dragnet, Perry Mason, and all that stuff because that's what I watched as a kid because that what was on Channel 56.
And they were already reruns.
Yeah, it's the stuff that I watched in syndication as a kid. And the stuff that I watched as a kid, The Bionic Woman and The Man from Atlantis and all that stuff, it's just garbage. I don't like that. I have no interest in it. But like all the stuff that I watch is the stuff that I watched as a kid. And it's so weird that everything goes back to your childhood. Like you're booting up your hard drive. Everything is on there. Look at your relationship with your parents and then draw the analogies to your marriage. I defy you to not see a parallel.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever had the experience?
It's what they say about sitting in your own, when you make yourself miserable because it's what you know.
Mm.
I know people that will snatch defeat from the jaws of victory so they can be back in their comfort zone, unhappiness.
I'm right in front of you.
And
I don't need
this. And as they say is, it's like being in your own shit. He's neck deep in it, but it's warm, it's comfortable, and it's his. And that's hard to
transcend.
Give yourself permission to be happy. It's huge and hard.
Yeah. What's amazing.
Huge and hard, two words, not in my Match.com profile.
Small and soft.
Yeah.
Soft like macaroni and cheese. Yeah. Dana Gould.
Frantic,
is coming
impotent.
At you.
Yeah. Frantic, impotent stabbing is in there at some point.
Why do you yell during sex, the incredible shrinking man? My thing is, I cannot believe when I say things now, when I'm with my wife or even out loud, how I have become my dad. Uh-huh. Like, it feels like even the
You no longer sleep with your mom?
Come on! No, I hear his voice. Like my voice sounds the same as his.
I don't have a Match.com. I don't know.
You don't.
Have you ever gone on a...
No. That looks like a rabbit hole.
It sounds like the perfect combination of pussy and Home Depot. The aisles are too big and too long. There's too much and never going to do it.
What about Tinder and
I've never done anything.
Yeah, I've never
done
that.
I have to.
I think the way you said that was like
it's
the
hard
way you say you have to build a dig a trench. Yeah.
Well, I talk to people who like, I don't want to be alone.
Yeah.
I don't want to be alone. And that's not how you meet somebody worthwhile.
Right.
Out of fear of being alone. Usually the people that you meet sending out, and by the way, this is something, this is a talk I talk, not a walk I walk. I'll be very honest.
What's that?
If you send out dignified? A vibe of desperation,
yeah,
you know, you're not going to meet somebody worth your while that's go like, oh, you're good. You know, you're going to meet somebody that agrees with you. Like, I don't want to be alone either. And then yes! everybody's, it's after 2 weeks, you open up your ugly box and all the snakes come out.
Yeah.
And it's also hard if you have had really great relationships that are no longer alive, because then you just compare. We've been on That's two dates true, and I yeah. don't feel connected to you
yeah.
like I did to that person I was with for years.
Yeah, after date one, you're like, you don't get me.
Yeah, no, sure, you just, forget it.
You don't get me like yeah. the person I was with for 10 years.
Yeah, no, but you do.
Idiot, you idiot.
Yeah, you do that.
I know.
What kind of ice cream do you want? Chocolate. Fuck you. I'm not doing this.
How did people fucking meet? I mean, everybody says
church,
you have to meet.
Church, they met at church.
No, I mean, everybody says you have to meet now on Tinder or whatever the fuck. Does it mean that we don't have any community centers anymore? Like, no, I mean, places where people go physically. That's how people
used to meet. Yeah.
Meet.
I'm blanking on a name. The woman that hosts Suicide Girls Radio. She's great. She's been on this show before. And she said, don't go online. Don't hole up in your house. Live your life. Go to the places you want to go. Mm-hmm. Experience stuff. And just go outside. And if you're doing the things that you're interested in, you'll meet people that are interested
in the same thing. Is that so far off? Like, why does everybody have to go
But on? Also, there's this whole culture, and this is where I really am going to sound out of touch.
Yeah.
There's this whole culture of people that are just meeting and fucking.
Yeah, huh?
And I didn't get that.
Yeah,
me and either. I'm...
Are they they're just meeting and fucking, but come on. There's got to be emotionality behind it. Like, are they just robotically meeting and fucking?
I think. I do. Yeah. It's just, but I talk people under 35 or under 40. They're just like banging the way we used to take our gals to the malt shop. Yeah, they're just banging away like a gypsy with a tambourine. I'm sitting up here in Falcon Slayer watching Perry Mason with a 65 Ambassador in the garage, wondering.
Afraid to go yeah. on Tinder.
Yeah, like, afraid to go like, on Tinder. Like, I'm at the point now I see a beautiful woman and I fantasize about jacking off to her. Oh, man, it would be so great to masturbate to her. Why don't you meet her? What? That's not even on the table. I'm just imagining I had like 10 minutes in an old t-shirt.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. I would have like, you know what I'd do? Oh. I'd go in the bedroom. I'd close the door. The dogs wouldn't bother me. I'd have that Husker Du t-shirt I never wear anymore. And I'd put that on the bed and I'd just let one yep. rip.
And then someone shows you a picture of her and she goes, man, you should really check out this woman. And you go, I've already had her.
Exactly.
You hold up the t-shirt. Look, see that pile over there? That's some of the prettiest women in the world.
You see that? You see that pile of stiff t-shirts standing end on end like glaciers because they're stiff with ejected loneliness?
Oh my fucking
Because
God.
They are now hardened with the Elmer's glue of solitude. The ejected shampoo of my isolation. The Jergens lotion of desperation.
Oh,
I could go on.
They
and on.
All work.
I could go on and on. We all know what I'm saying. When does Chris Matthews evolve into a beam of pure energy?
Yeah, I think if there's a cable pundit most likely to will himself into teleportation or walk through a wall. I think they ought to write him into the next X-Man thing. You know, give him a trick. Hyperbola man, you know.
Tell me about a power right now.
Yeah, yeah. It would be a good inside joke. He's a nice guy in real life.
Yes, I've certainly lampooned him enough. I did meet him. I met him at Real Time with Bill Maher once, and I introduced myself, and then he just started to tell me the names of other famous people named Dana.
Yeah. He's literally,
I was like, hi, Danny Gould. Danny Gould, Danny Elcare.
What he,
Dan Andrews.
What he kind of wants
yes,
to.
Yes, those are also my name.
Yeah. Yeah. What he kind of wants to be, and in some ways kind of should have been and would have been 30 years ago, is a Philly city councilman.
Yeah, he's a great. Everybody working?
Yeah. How you doing? Jobs in progress. Yeah. How you doing? It's Matthews. How you doing, old lady?
The middle class has been squeezed and obliterated in this country for the past 30 years.
On and off. I'd say 20.
20.
Been worse in the last 10. Obama has not been the middle class hero.
Right. Is that because of free trade? Why did that happen? How did that happen? Here's what I refuse to believe. That anyone in politics sits down and says, how do we fuck the middle class?
Right. No.
I think everyone in business does it, but I don't know about people in politics.
No, see, I'll push back, you commie. business, the better the middle class is doing economically, the more money business makes. Because that's their market. That's who they sell to.
I know, but I don't.
I know. Okay.
But the evidence does not belie the understanding of that.
This is the big left wing thing about corporate profits. Those oil company profits. When an oil company makes profit, the money goes to really three different things. Either give it back to the shareholders, which is your retirement fund, or maybe you, in dividends, or they spend money hiring people to drill for more oil and stuff, stuff like that. Or they put a little bit of money into a reserve for a rainy day or cash on hand. And yeah, they may bonus some executives. They pay their employees.
Right.
So there's no room with the gold coins where they're like hoarding it to keep it from everybody else.
Right.
So I got some issues with perfect capitalism because I like the corner store, not necessarily the big box coming in, wiping out a family business. I think the inefficiencies of that in retail are a good social value. The middle class has had the problem of basically our economy has had slow economic growth, which means wages have. Now, we haven't had a lot of inflation. That's by classic economics good. But in real wages, what your money buys, it's not gone up quite enough, and we have increasingly an underclass of people who don't have the skills to get a decent-paying job. Now, I'm a right-wing nut, so I'd say less pot, more homework. That's a lesson that's kind of unhip now. Johnny's got a problem with the oppressive nature of homework, so the therapist says, we got a lot of that. I took a freighter to China in 2008.
You really did, by the way.
I really did, yeah. Well, another writer buddy and I, separate cabins. Everybody says, you took a freighter to China? Was it like a knife fight for a coconut in the engine room? No. You're in it's like a German technical college, yellow room with a bed. Because I owed a script, actually, to HBO.
Right. And you had to lock yourself in a room to do it.
Yeah, Business Affairs Online, too.
I've been in that situation.
Yeah, exactly. So I
Where's what?
took to the high seas. And I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and I care about industrial jobs.
Yes.
But I came up the Yangtze into Shanghai. I saw two brand new Detroits, and I get off the ship, and we were carrying 10,000 containers, mostly empty from Seattle. We would be full, of course. The captain told me he'd be full going back. Told me they were carrying pharmaceutical scrap iron and animal skins, 500 boxes. The rest were empty, 9,500 empty shipping containers as big as a semi.
Really?
So they're flinging the cans off
full
the
of
ship.
Women for the leisure sector,
yes.
Whatever that means.
So I ask a couple of port workers are down there, and the new guys, because they dropped a container on the last guys last week, because the Chinese port moves so fast, there are accidents. So told the officer told me. But anyway, yes. I get off the ship.
I've been to China several times.
You get the vibe.
Yeah.
A couple of port workers wanted to talk to me to practice their English. Now, at the port of Long Beach, I never walk around. Can I try my Chinese on you?
Right.
Or my Spanish or my anything else? So it wasn't great, but they knew a few words. And I asked one of them, do you have a union? Ha, 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 not really.
Right.
And I said, what kind of health benefits do you get here? And they looked at me and said, China, work then die. So I'm not saying that's what we want to be, but that's who we're competing against.
Right.
And Bernie would say, well, build a wall. Don't buy anything from China. Okay, then we have a global depression because free trade actually does help anybody.
Right.
Ask anybody in American agriculture or anybody working in Moline, Illinois, building tractors or all the other things we export. The whole we have to be a little tougher in our trade deals, but free trade has been proven 1,000 times. A trade war started the Great Depression. So what's happening now is in the new economy where we have to work a little harder and be
– I didn't know that a trade war started.
Tariffs really started it all. Smoot-Hawley is the – because trade wars sound
popular. That did ring a bell from some class.
Screw the foreigners, you know?
Right. Well, it's an easy message.
But what we have to do is educate people to have high productivity jobs.
Right.
Which means the schools have to work.
Yes.
Which means also families breaking apart is a problem. We don't like to talk about that because it's all judgy and, we can't judge anybody. Everybody gets a trophy, but it is an issue. So when we start having – what we have now is the economy is dynamic enough that people who went to college and worked pretty hard are doing pretty great.
Right.
And a lot of other people are doing really shitty.
Right.
And it's starting to become the un-American thing of a big distance between the two.
Right.
And that is the question of domestic politics we got to fix. It was not a mistake we called the Jeb Bush super PAC the Right to Rise, because mm-hmm. our theory is we've got to realign our way we operate to help people the spectrum, not just guys who graduated from Yale.
I agree, just a sort of a sociocultural thing, and coming from a very blue collar working class background, one of the things that works against the motivation to rise is just kicking back and thinking we're number one.
Oh yeah, there's
because
a lot of that.
That prohibits holding on to that spot.
Yeah,
because
that's what I hate about
and
Trump.
It's like, we're number. Yeah, I agree.
The wrestling chant of USA
yeah,
number one.
Yeah,
all the
we're
time.
Number
yeah.
one in what?
Yeah,
we're number one in what actually? And like, yeah, we are a great country. We have, we are the envy of the world in many ways. But we don't shit ice cream out of a platinum. But
well, yeah,
I
would say we are number one, but we've stopped working very hard to earn number one, which
yeah.
means it'll melt away.
Yeah. We're number one, but other people want to be number one, and they're working harder than we are.
Right. No, they wouldn't mind being number 17. They'd like to have a life expectancy other than 60.
But getting back to the emotional thing of like, I just feel like I've become my dad certain times. And it's a weird thing because part of me thinks and this is the fucked up thing about not being able to transcend where you came from, is like, I feel like I've done so much work on myself. I feel like I have, but then it's just in my DNA where I'll yell like my dad, or just, you know, I don't know. It's like, how do you fucking?
Well,
how do you
it is in your DNA.
Go beyond
you are that
is.
Guy.
Yeah, yeah. So.
I look so much like my father. It's spooky.
Is that right?
Yeah. And when I would get angry, my ex-wife would call me Kenny, my dad's name. Like, all right, Kenny. And sometimes, like, you ever go to like the grocery store and you come back. You know, you just catch yourself in the mirror of the window of your car, and you're like, ah!
Oh, God. I have blackened all the mirrors.
My cars are lined with tinfoil,
yeah,
so I don't.
I mean, I legally have to keep the car mirror, but all other mirrors have been spray painted.
So, to that end, you can't really escape your father because you are just him. It's really strange. I find that funny when my daughter says something really funny.
Yeah.
Because there's no genetic component.
Yes.
it's even funnier.
That is really cool, huh?
Yeah.
Lulu. Because there's no genetic component.
Yeah. I took Lulu to a play that was not great. And she's 13. Mm-hmm. And at the intermission, she went, "Hey, Dad, I think I left something in the car." I said, "What?" She went, "An hour of my life I'll never get back." Like, okay, we can leave. I think we can end on this, and I don't think I'm painting with a broad brush when I say all theater sucks.
Wow. I know some New York theater people, and specifically musical theater people, that would have cut your throat at that line.
I was at a wedding once, and it was literally like the Yale Whiff and Poofs. Like, there was some like vocal group, and
the Yale Whiff and
there was
Poofs.
Some weird vocal group, friends from college, got their vocal, you know, whatever they were, the Frayed Knots, whatever they were. And at one point,
the Nodes, I think, would be a great name for a vocal group.
The guy literally said at the wedding, excuse me, hello. Give us your gift of silence. We'll give you our gift of music.
Can we say that as comedians now?
Give me your gift of silence.
I'll give you the gift of laughter.
Where I grew up, that's where you would get murdered. But so, Ed, how do we do this? You're a Bernie Sanders man.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to get the nom.
Yeah, that's
are you going to hold your nose and vote for Hillary, or are you just going to like forget?
I couldn't vote for Hillary.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, in good conscience, I couldn't vote for Hillary. I mean, if it's just
– that is a vote for Trump.
I wouldn't vote for – obviously, I wouldn't vote for Trump.
Right, but if you don't
But I wouldn't be voting for her. I mean, just...
I don't think it will matter because he's not going to win California. But if you were in a...
Yeah.
If you were in a...
Contested state,
you'd have to vote for
Hillary. I would be just so... Well, that's the thing is I'm so pissed off.
Right.
That the choice is Hillary or Trump. And that's what the country's become. Seriously.
Yeah.
The country has become an argument between the far right and the right. And there needs to be...
Yeah.
There needs to be another... alternative.
Yes.
You know, there needs to be, it needs to be, all these other countries have four or five or six candidates. Seriously, we have two candidates who are, I mean, Trump is an extreme. So, yes.
A historical anomaly.
The Democrats, they're trying. I don't know. I think they, you said before that Stewart said at least the Democrats are trying. They're trying a little.
Yeah.
Not a lot. I mean, I loved the fact that Sanders talked about the economics that really need to be talked about.
Sure.
The Wall Street crooks and the billionaire class and just all that stuff. And so to vote for Hillary, it just feels like a horrible, horrible betrayal of everything I believe in.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's this whole thing, the whole American political scene has become, it's the lesser of two evils thing.
But that if
has become what the election is all about lately.
And I would argue that if it is the lesser of two evils, is it not immoral to vote for the lesser of the evils? You know, I knew a lot of people that thought that there was no difference between George W. Bush and Al Gore, and I bet there is.
Yeah. That's the year that everybody blames Nader.
Yeah. I think because
for running, and I don't blame Nader. Well, he has a right to fucking run.
He has a right to run, but I am one of those.
Why doesn't Gore be a better candidate?
I agree with that, but there's also just a pragmatic thing of like, if Nader wasn't on the ballot, Gore would have won.
See, that's the whole thing. That's what the country's come down to.
Yeah.
Is this pragmatism between shit and shinola.
Mm-hmm. Vote for Bernie and let him get the nomination.
Yeah.
If he doesn't get the nomination, then he doesn't get to run. If he gets
the
nomination,
can he run as an independent? Can he run as an independent?
Yeah, but he could. But the way our system is and the way our population is, if Bernie Sanders ran as an independent, there's a reason Donald Trump wants him to run as an independent, because Donald Trump wants to win.
Would it be the scenario where Sanders would siphon off votes?
Yes. That's why Clinton beat Bush, because of Ross Perot.
Yeah.
Ross Perot got 19% of the vote, I think.
Well, then on the other hand, just what we talked about, if Trump gets it, like everybody is so fucking petrified about Trump.
I'm just like, let him in and let him trash the place. And
well, no. I mean, if Trump gets in office, we just said that these candidates are hood ornaments on trucks.
Yeah.
Right? What is going to happen? You know,
I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about the fucking goons that he will bring in with him. He has already said that his energy secretary would be this guy that's a famous climate change denier.
Oh.
You know, it's like, that's what I'm worried about.
Well, we've already just the environment. I mean, it's dire. It's dire what's going on with Democrats. I mean, with our system in place, the environment has become a commodity because of corporate greed.
Yeah.
I mean, fracking, what fucking oil companies are doing with fracking alone, but nobody wants to know
about that. No one wants to talk about fracking. People are more concerned about how fracking is not sexual slang.
Exactly, though. That's so true.
A Google search for anal fracking brings up nothing.
My
jaw is still on the floor.
Look, I don't even have kids. And I think any serious person who has seen a satellite picture of the Arctic.
Of the Arctic, yeah.
We're fucked.
Mm-hmm. This is what will happen.
Happen?
I don't know, but what...
this is what will happen.
Well, let me finish. What will happen is something no one is anticipating. That's the interesting thing.
Yes.
Something is going
to
happen.
But something catastrophic.
Oh, it will be awful.
I hate to be a doomsayer because that's not being cool.
Well, that's the George... That's
which is what I get labeled with all the time, you know, this whole talk about...
But that's the great George Carlin thing.
What did he say?
The planet isn't going anywhere.
That's true.
We are.
Yes. I heard him say that, and there's such clarity to that.
And it's beautiful. So yes. Look, we are not going to save the planet. We are going to continue to destroy the planet to the point that it is no longer inhabitable. And then the planet will heal itself after it's shaken us off. Like,
but you know what
condition.
You know what he does not say in that little that sentence, and that's a great analysis. And I really feel for this. I'm just so in touch with this is gonna sound so faggy, but I'm so in touch with nature. Mm-hmm. And I just hate the way the level of extinction of species now is absolutely there's something like 100 species being extinct.
Yes.
Every fucking day. Whatever city I go to, I say, so what's going on here? What's your big problems? I was in Bloomington, not to brag, I was in Bloomington, Indiana. And they said, well, deer come on our lawns. These fucking poor animals, they have nothing to eat anymore. Mm-hmm. And they come, I mean, every day on the fucking news in LA, a bear is in Target.
Yeah.
And the cashiers are nervous about these bears. You know, they do not want to check these bears out. They're like, bears don't have a credit. Credit is sketchy.
They have like coupons, but no money. Well, let's end on a quote from the great Percy Mayfield.
What is that?
I love the world because the world is a part of me, but I get so afraid at the progress that has been made towards eternity.
The good news is I'm still an optimist because we still, believe it or not, have the best legal system, the best innovation culture. We have the best universities.
Yes.
We have
the innovation culture for sure.
We have raw materials. We can totally not be choked out by foreign oil anymore. We have all the ingredients to run the table this century. But one, we got to get off our ass. Two, we got to fix our educational system. And we got to remember the hustle that made us Americans. And we need a system where people believe in the American dream, where anybody can get ahead. And that's, we've lost our grip on that. And if we don't get it back, we won't reach our potential as a country and we're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So there it is. And people say, oh, that sounds hard. You know, I go, look, you know what was hard? Anzio Beach was hard.
Right.
Nobody, you know, right now, there's foreign stuff where American troops are in danger. That's really hard. But the stronger we are economically, the stronger we are in world affairs, the less risk of that stuff.
Right.
And so, you know, it's kind of a tragedy. We could run the table. And instead, we have Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton. So the next 4 years, I don't think are going to be the big turnaround.
Right.
But I think I'm pretty optimistic, other than all the hoverboards and the, you know, retinal implants of TV screens and the kind of downside of technology. I'm pretty optimistic about the world my daughter will have. Uh-huh. And she'll live to 110.
I think one of the problems that has resulted, reasons that Trump is in the position that he is that there's a giant media colossus made up of several independent things, the internet, Drudge and Fox News, and that basically wakes up in the morning, whips people into a blind frenzy, and then checks out for the night. And that you have people are not challenged to, and it's not as prevalent on the left. It is not as effective, certainly.
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty prevalent.
Yeah.
I look at my Twitter feed sometimes.
But I do believe that when you have Bill O'Reilly, et cetera, Bill O'Reilly, Drudge, whoever, Hannity on the radio, whipping people into this frenzy, when you tell people that the president is a terrorist every day for 8 years, they get a little irrational.
Yeah, well, there's... You know? Again, I think there's a symmetry to it. Yeah.
Clearly, the internet George W. Bush was mentally disabled and an evil super genius at the same time.
Right.
You can't be Dr. No and Dumb and Dumber at the same time.
The internet on both sides is great at screaming simplicity and amplifying resentment. And that's the big problem. Now we've got faster information than ever before from more places. So it's been democratized, but there are no editors. There's no filter to it. So that's been the great thing about Trump and Twitter. He hasn't had to spend any money. He's famous. He's a pre-aware title. So he has that ability to go out and have an unfiltered message that would have been harder to get out in the old days, mm-hmm. that people who agree with him can say, I think they all are rapists and murderers. I'm signing up.
Right.
And so either side now can put a rougher message out there and build movements for free with the power of the internet. Now, there's no putting that toothpaste back in the tube, but we got to make a cultural decision as a country about, is there a way to force the internet, which is always evolving, or at least what we reward on the internet, to be a little more grown up.
Right.
Because if not, we screw ourselves.
Yeah, I think we're seeing that.
You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to move into McDonald's, live there, and eat that stuff for a year and die. Okay, it's free country. You can do it.
Right.
The internet does the same for information. There's a lot of junk information out there. And if you addict yourself to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, it'll make you stupid.
Last question. You've worked for John McCain?
I have.
You've worked for Mitt Romney?
In 2000. I didn't work for him.
Yeah.
Straight Talk Express.
Straight Talk Express was you.
Right. Well, it wasn't me. It was a bunch. It was him.
You and a bunch of people.
But yeah, I was one of his guys on that. I had a lot of fun.
And you worked for Mitt Romney?
I worked for him for governor. I didn't do the presidential race.
Barack Obama?
I sound like a mob leader here. I was not there. I'd never been to the Johnson Fish Market.
But Joey Gallo, never heard of him.
I don't know who he is.
But Barack Obama,
never worked
good president, great president. What will history think?
Historically important, mediocre president at best. I don't like it. He's in full retreat around the world, which...
He's in what?
He's in full retreat around the world, which lets the bad actors act, which means the poor next person is going to have to slap them back, which is going to be a risk of American blood and treasure.
Right.
It's amateur night in foreign policy.
Uh-huh.
In domestic policy, I'm not a liberal. I don't think he did a lot. Mm-hmm. Did a lot in a positive way. I think his election was historic for the country and maybe did good things for the culture that way. But I am disappointed in Obama.
And did you say that to Mr. Axelrod?
Oh, yeah, all the time. But we basically cancel each other out.
I remember when I was a child, my dad voting for McGovern and my mother voting for Nixon just to cancel out my dad's vote. Reagan Democrat now.
What happens, like with Ax and I and people, we don't argue much about politics because we know where we stand.
Right.
It was like when you brought up House of Cards. I was thinking in my head, you might ask me if I watched that. And the truth is, I've seen one episode.
No, of course
because
you don't.
Because the last thing I was come
stand-up.
Home for a long...
I don't watch stand-up. Yeah, exactly. I like
the UK one better, too. I did watch that.
Yeah, I don't watch... Well, the UK one had... what's his name in it?
Blank.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it...
So great.
No, that's in the...
Oh, that's
that was
in the loop.
That was the Nucci thing. Yeah, in the loop. The original House of Cards, a three UK miniseries was perfect. And it was written based on their parliamentary system and all the intrigue. But larger point being, you don't unwind watching old Comedy Central 30-minute stand-up beats.
No, I do not.
And I get enough politics in my life. And that's the only hard thing for me is when I'm with normal people, it's always like, so what do you think of Hillary? Who's her running mate going to be?
Yeah.
Satan? You know, I try to... I try to kill the conversation immediately.
Hammett.
Somebody who loves her love of child porn. What do you think about that? You know, I just try to totally, because my nightmare, my wife teases me about this. People, and they're so nice, they always come up to me, you're so reasonable. You know, and I'm like, no, I'm really not that reasonable. I'm a right-wing nut. I just don't like stupid people running my party. So, I'm always Sergeant Schultz. You seem so nice for a Nazi. It's like, not a Nazi, not that nice. Good to see you, Dan.
Let's end it on that.
Take care, pal.
Other podcasts reach for the sky. David Goldbaum.
We barely try.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano.
Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
Work keeps me from feeling